Today's episode of Rob Has a Podcast is sponsored by iCrack. Now, we definitely saw some cracks in the alliance between Scott and Jason and Ty last night. But if your phone has cracks in it, like every phone that my wife has ever owned, iCracked is the service for you because it's like the Uber of iPhone repair, because iCracked provides iPhone repair that comes to you. Great for busy professionals or businesses that don't have time to wait around to go figure out where to take their phone. They've got fast, convenient, professional iPhone repair at the time and location of your choosing, whether it's your home, your office, a coffee shop, whatever. They work around your busy schedule, and they've got a network of 5,000 on-demand phone repair technicians in over 600 cities all across the U.S. who are trained and background checked. So for a limited time, our listeners can get a free tempered glass screen protector with an on-demand repair. Go to iCracked.com/Rob. That's iCracked, iCracked.com/Rob for a free tempered glass screen protector. And feel free to enjoy this podcast all loosey-goosey, because if your phone breaks, you know what to do. Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now here's the guy who's nobody's missed connection on Craigslist, Rob Cesternino. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the podcast. We have a very special show for you today because we have a guest here in the studio, the great Shireen Askui. I never say your last name because I'm always sure I'm going to butcher it.
Yeah.
So I just say
that's okay.
Shireen.
Yeah, it's good.
That's good?
It's good.
Okay. All right, Shireen.
I can teach you how to say Shireen properly, but...
Yeah, am I saying that wrong?
No, I mean, that's how I... That's the Americanized version, but it's really pronounced Shireen.
Shireen.
Yeah. Don't... Okay. Yeah, don't bother.
I'll kill it. I'll
it's fine.
Okay. Shireen O.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's good.
Anyway, I'm so excited that you're here. I really am. I've been really looking forward to this since we started talking about it. Really, I've been looking forward to this since... Well, you know, before you were on Second Chance, yeah. And I'm so glad that you came here in person to do this.
Yep. Super excited to be here.
I'm flattered to have you here and really excited to get into this because we have a very fun season to talk about.
Yeah, and such an amazing episode. I got lucky. I was supposed to be here next week. And then, I don't know if you remember, but a couple weeks ago, I was like, it's better for me with my work schedule to come a week earlier.
Yeah.
I feel bad for whoever's doing next week.
Well, who knows? But every week, the episodes have been getting better.
It's true.
I felt like last week was the best episode of the season.
Yes.
And Steven and I were like, boy, we really got lucky with, we got a really great episode to do the know-it-alls. And then this one was even better than last
week.
Even better.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So I don't know where it goes from here, but we've been very lucky. And this is a very fun show to talk about. So first off, before we talk Survivor stuff, how have you been? What's going on with you?
I've been good.
Yes.
Back into the daily life routine. Finally, I don't know, you play two back-to-back seasons in Survivor. Like, just playing one season Survivor takes over your life. You play a second season, like your life is over.
Yes.
And I'm finally back to being a normal human.
Right, because it was, what, about a year ago that you were getting voted out on Worlds Apart?
Yep.
And sort of like we went right into, I believe it was like the first week in May that we started the Second Chance campaign.
Yep.
So probably within what, like 2 weeks of you being voted out, the Second Chance campaign started?
Yeah, well, actually, I went to finals before I was even voted out.
Yeah.
So for me, I like already had to, you know, get into the right mindset and start like working out again and all this stuff. And no rest.
And then filming, and then the season comes on.
Yep.
And then I actually saw you back in New York that the last time we did the know-it-alls in the fall was your boot episode on the Second Chances.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually was lucky enough to see you that we both worked together to do the Dalton Ross Survivor Talk.
Yep. R.I.P. those Survivor Talks.
Yes, yes. Well, maybe he's only bringing them out for the big seasons.
Okay.
And yeah, we did a sketch.
Yep.
And I tried to take my acting very seriously.
Yeah. You were okay. You were no Boston Rob, but...
I'm no Boston Rob. I do feel like that the Survivor trying to do any sort of acting, I feel like that the move is that they always overdo it. And I try to underdo it.
Yeah.
Try to be more lifelike, more realistic. Try to take it very seriously.
Yeah. Well, Nailed it.
Yeah, I feel like anytime you see like any of these like survivors, especially like with the old seasons, like when they were ever on a show, they're always just like way over the top.
Oh yeah, that's true. Like Malcolm and his soap opera.
How dare you, Shireen? How dare you?
I didn't even see. I heard Jeremy and Joe were on a soap opera
as
well.
You didn't watch that?
No.
Oh, yeah. That's good. That's good. You have to watch that. That's great.
Was Jeremy good? I could see Jeremy holding back a little. No?
Yeah. With all due respect to the writing of The Bold and the Beautiful, I feel like they didn't give them a lot to work with.
I see.
They're sort of like
After the Malcolm debacle, how could they?
I feel like in the Joe and Jeremy thing, they're like making fun of a guy because that he's not good at balancing biscotti on his coffee.
Oh.
So, I don't know. Sort of like, well, Joe's good at challenges, so he should be able to make fun of somebody for that.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, so all right, enough soap opera talk.
Okay, okay.
So, very excited to have you here to get into all of this stuff with this big vote from last night where Ty does not give, almost like how you did not give Will Sims his letter. That was like Ty, he did not give the Super Idol to Scott Pollard. And Stephen and I talked about this last night, how we love the episode, we love the drama, but we didn't love the move for Ty.
Yeah.
What did you think about this?
So I actually think that Ty was screwed either way and that he's basically just the kingmaker here deciding which side gets to go to the end.
Yeah.
Because, and like, I think that the edit seemed to support this, that those guys were not going to take Ty to the final three anyway. I don't think the girls are going to take Ty to the final three. So I think that, you know, instead he at least went with the better people, like, you know, and then there's some solace to that.
Yeah, no, I agree to that. I agree because it seems like that Ty does not really have a road to the end. Like, you kind of feel like that if he stuck with the guys, that if they were going to get rid of him anyway. And I asked Scott Pollard about this on the exit interview, and he was like, well, you know, because I said, were you telling Julia what she just needed to hear, or was that true? And I think he was basically saying that they probably would have gotten rid of Ty, but maybe he wins an immunity or two, and maybe he can ultimately, you know, be that person who ends up getting into the finals with an immunity run. But
it's true. If I'm Ty, what I'm thinking, I'm looking at the two groups and I'm thinking, like, I don't have a shot either way. But like, who do I have the better chance of winning immunities against, or who do I have a better chance of at least using like my idol and my advantages against?
Yeah.
Before they get me.
For me, I feel like that with Ty, if he was going to stick with the guys though, I feel like that he could get to the point where he's at four or five. And I feel like that at least depending on what the immunities are with his body type, like I feel like that he has a better shot against a Jason or a Scott. Again, now the challenges could be something where, you know, Jason could just go beast mode and not beast mode cowboy. And if it's like something like the final challenge in Worlds Apart where Mike is like, you know, that Jason probably blows Ty out of the water, something like that, where it's like, you know, a epic like flight of stairs and something like that. But if it's something that's like more of an endurance type challenge, at the end of the game, you got to feel like Ty has a really good shot at that, even though Jason just did win an endurance challenge in this episode.
Yeah, but I mean, you're right. No, I think if there are like balance beams in there, you're holding onto a pole for, you know, like hours, whatever. Of course, Ty wins. He's got that, you know, leaner body type.
But with what he's good at, I kind of feel like that Sydney and Aubrey, I feel like, are also similarly good at the same things that he's good at, whereas I feel like he's more different than Jason and Scott and might be able to beat those guys at the end. But I agree. There's no clear shot for him because you have to think that the women are probably not taking Ty to the end.
Yeah. I don't think anybody's taking Ty to the end. And the other thing is, well, I guess the other thing you could look at is like, who can you read better in terms of like when they're going to make their move against you, when they're going to screw you over? Mm-hmm. Does he have a better read on Scott and Jason when they're lying to him, or will he have a better read on Aubrey? Will Aubrey be, you know, because she's so authentic and a bit of a bleeding heart, like, will she let him know before his time so that he can actually do something about it? And I don't know.
Now, you and Ty are both from the same city, correct?
Yeah, and I've hung out with him a couple times. He is a really amazing person.
Yeah.
You know, just the I think the edit does him justice in that, like, he is really kind-hearted, sees the best in people, but is also, you can see the conflict. So I watched the episode where he voted Anna out, and he he was so conflicted about it. He felt so bad. And even though, like, we're standing there watching together and she's throwing him under the bus over and over and over again, he still felt so badly about turning on her at the end. Like, he, you know, and my heart just went out to him. I'm like, screw her.
Yeah, it's sort of crazy in all of this where Ty was going to save Anna with his idol. Scott says, no, don't do that. Yeah. That's a bad move.
Right.
It comes down to the point where Ty could save Scott with that same idol, and then Ty does not save Scott with the idol that Scott said to save for the rainy day.
Yeah, but no, but okay, but here's the thing. There's several things that are noteworthy about that idol play/not play.
Mm-hmm.
Given the fact that he did end up voting for Scott, given the way that the numbers panned out, if he had played his idol for Scott, then, and they'd super idled together, then he would have been going home because it would have been a tie 2-2 between him and Aubrey. And on the revote, everybody would have voted out Ty.
Interesting. Interesting. Do you feel like that Ty had realized that?
No.
It's so
unclear.
I think
at that point he was already committed to flipping on Scott, which is why he voted against him.
Right. So let's just talk this through, because that would have been a complete disaster in the making.
Yes.
So Ty uses the super idol to save Scott in that instance.
Uh-huh.
And so, okay, Scott gets super idol and gets saved. So now the four votes are gone. So now the vote is 2-2.
Yes.
Two votes Ty, two votes for
Aubrey.
Two votes for Aubrey. Okay.
So the two of them don't get a vote. There are six people left who can vote. It's Scott and Jason, who will again vote for Aubrey.
Yes.
And maybe even Julia votes for Aubrey.
Okay.
But I doubt it, because then the other three people are, you know, Michelle, Joe, and
Sydney.
Sydney.
Right.
Michelle, Joe, and Sydney are definitely not voting for Aubrey. They're going to vote out Ty.
Mm-hmm.
Julia is not going to want to force a tie and draw a rock, so she'll vote with them
like
as well.
It seems like that Julia would probably go with the women because she's not going to want to go into some sort of a rock draw in this scenario.
Yeah.
So, boy, this is really worst case scenario for Ty, where he ends up saving Scott to give up his own life in the game.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But can we also talk about, I don't know if I'm jumping the gun here.
No, that's fine. So,
okay.
But that, just to be clear, though, but we don't think that Ty, that it's hard to say how much everybody knew at this point in time, but it seems unlikely that Ty was aware of this scenario at the point that he does not give the idol to Scott.
Correct.
Okay.
Because at that point, he'd already voted against Scott. He's committed to the plan of voting Scott out.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I don't think it even needs to go through his head that he's going to, you know, screw himself over by doing that. Oops.
That's fine. That's huge. Okay, what else?
Okay, so the other thing is, like, the way that, I mean, Scott played, like, the limited grasp of this game that Scott has, like, really shined in this episode. So, you know, Julia warned the guys, hey, we're all voting for Ty. Ty's going to get all the votes. We're trying to flush his idol. And what that, if you truly believe her, if you think that that's the way the votes are going to go, then you let Ty play his, let him play his idol ahead of time and only use one idol. You don't use both, and, you know, for the super idol scenario.
Yeah.
Right. And if he was holding back to do the super idol thing, then again, like, you're going to blow two idols anyway. You know, you're guaranteed going to blow two idols anyway. Then just to be safe, again, like, play both of them ahead of time.
Yeah.
Just play it. So if you're intending to spend that idol either way, you don't need to do the super idol scenario unless it's, like, you know, for the show, for the performance.
Yeah.
Which is dumb.
This is fun, because I'm really glad that you are really into this. This is why they had to get rid of you on the second chance, that you have all this stuff figured out.
Right.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That you're like a regular Cochran's dream girl right now.
Right.
Working out all the scenarios.
I'm like the child of Sophie and Cochran / Cochran's dream
girl. / Cochran's dream girl. So then what was the right move? Scott and Jason, that they should have had then Ty play the idol? Because I asked Scott this morning, I said, well, why didn't you just have Ty play his idol and Scott play his idol? And he had said that it was because, well, Ty said, well, I don't want to use the idol if I don't have to. They thought that maybe they would be able to do some more sort of chicanery at tribal council and get them to vote somebody else off, maybe vote Joe off, so they wouldn't have to go into the teeth of the idol.
I mean, again, like, I just think that this is a reflection of of Scott's grasp on the game.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and that's fine. He's clearly not a fan of the show. Like, he's clearly not, like, working all these scenarios obsessively like a nerd like me is. But that's just not good gameplay. I think that, you know, your options are, and again, it depends on your mindset, like, but knowing what we know about how the episode panned out, I think the ideal move for Scott is for him to play his idol before the votes are read, because, I mean, I guess like from his point of view, he was thinking like, well, I'm not going to play it for myself because he was so confident that Ty was going to get all the votes and he wanted to do the super idol thing. Mm-hmm. But again, like if you're that confident that it's going to be on Ty, then play your idol for Ty.
Right.
Right. And like, and then.
But now if that the votes go on Ty and Ty plays his idol, now all of a sudden, so there were still four votes on Scott. He still ends up going home.
Actually, no. So the ideal move for Scott is like, if you're confident Ty is going to get the votes, but you want to play it safe just in case they actually put the votes on Scott instead of Ty, right? As was the case in the end, Scott should have played his own idol. Mm-hmm. And then he can look at Ty and say, look, like I'm playing my idol, which means like, we're not going to be able to super idol you if it is you, mm-hmm. and force Ty's hand to play his own idol.
Yeah.
And then if Ty still chooses not to, because he knows the votes are all going to Scott,
but
fine.
I think the big mistake that was made in all of this, and again, you know, you have to just like at some point, like tip your cap that this was a really great move from the Aubrey and Sydney side of things.
Yeah.
Where I think where it's the most damaging was this idea of Jason saying, okay, you take the idol to tribal council, because you could play an idol for another person.
Yes.
There was no reason why
Scott
needed to have the hidden immunity idol in his possession.
Yeah.
Just like, you know, in going back to your season in Worlds Apart, like Mike didn't give you the immunity idol that night and then hold on to it. It's the sort of thing where you can keep it on you now. And again, to reference things from Worlds Apart, even though that was two seasons ago, that was airing when this was filming. So, but that was the big mistake in my mind.
I think Mike's mistake on Worlds Apart was that he didn't have to officially give me the idol, but he could have had me hold on to it, make it look like it's mine. And that way, even if I'm voted out, like it wasn't an official handoff. It's just me, you know, because it needs to be an official handoff, I think, according to the rules, that like it belongs to me. So if I had walked into tribal council, like not officially owning it, but just holding on to it for Mike, like then everybody would have thought that it was actually mine. And then I think it possibly could have scared people further. I don't necessarily think that it would have changed anything, but it would have been scarier. And I think that in this case, it was just a total misplay because, like, again, I mean, obviously, there's nothing even insightful to be said here. Jason was protected with the actual immunity necklace just in case Scott goes home, which he did. He still gets to have the idol.
Was that anything that ever came up in Worlds Apart about this idea? Then Steven and I were really getting into it last night about how what are the rules if somebody gets voted out and they have the hidden immunity idol? Is that clear where production is saying, hey, if you have the idol and you get voted out with it, you can't pass it off or anything like that?
Yeah, you cannot pass it off. If you officially own that idol, like if it's like if it belongs to you and you get voted out with it, you cannot hand it off to anybody. But there are also official rules on when and how it can be handed off and who's in possession of it. So it needs to happen either at tribal council or at camp. And like it needs to be an official, like the person needs to say, I am giving you my idol. So for example, if Mike...
Is that why what happened last week where Ty say, I am receiving the idol?
Yeah, they were just being like overly...
Pedantic about it?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly why they did it. And then it officially became Ty's idol. And, you know, Ty could have held on to it and it would have been his officially. But that's also why, like at camp, when they, you know, in the beginning of this episode, when they went back to camp, he... as pedantically gave it back to Scott where he said, like, I grant you back your idol. Like,
yeah.
I received
give
this
back,
idol.
Give back to Jason.
Yeah.
But, you know, interestingly, though, that for Ty, so he gave the idol back, and I think a lot of people were probably yelling at the TV during the week. And then Jason had tweeted that, you know, during the week, hey, he gave it back to me a minute into the episode. But he ultimately then, it was almost as good as if he didn't give it back because not only did it, he voted out Scott, but he also voted that idol out of the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, actually, like, it would have been more powerful for Ty to hold on to it at that point, and that could have been his... That could have actually been an even bigger move, because now, although it does paint a bigger target on Ty's back, but now he has a super idol in his own pocket in addition to voting out Scott, right? Whereas, like, by giving it back and the idol now being out of the game, like, also great in terms of... removing the power from the guys, but But Ty now is still only left with his own idol.
Yeah. Following the arc of Ty throughout this season, so what did you think was sort of the line in the sand? Like, what was the straw that broke the camel's back for him where he ends up breaking away from the guys to end up voting against them?
Yeah, again, so I don't know what actually happened out there, but based on what I saw on my TV, I see, you know, Ty really feeling a connection with Aubrey. I feel like she's, you know, hitting on all the right notes that he wants to hear in terms of, and I think she was genuine about it, but like, but what fantastic gameplay on her part where she's, you know, just like playing to their shared insecurities. And so, you know, he feels a connection with her. He goes back to the guys and says, hey guys, like, I think I've connected with Aubrey and I think she'll work with us. And then they just completely disregard. And then for them to say like, let's vote out Aubrey, like, yeah, this person that I've just connected with and I've told you I want to work with, you've just like totally swept away. You've stolen that from me. And now you're saying that we need to vote her out. Like, are you kidding me? You're really not listening to me. You're really not paying attention to me. And they just talked right over him. And then you could actually see in his face during the episode, like, he just looked so sad in that moment.
Yeah. That you're right. And I did think at the point that was a terrible move by Ty to go back and say to them, hey, Aubrey is going to work with us. Because I didn't even think that's what she was saying, right?
I don't believe that's what she was saying either. I think she was trying to get
she
him.
She was trying to say, hey, Ty, vote with us.
Yeah.
And he went back and was like, hey, guys, great news. Yeah. Aubrey wants to work with us. And luckily for him, they were like, I say we vote her out next.
Yeah. No, I was pulling my hair a little bit when he went back and did that. And then like immediately they did what I call pulling a Debbie onto him.
Yes.
Where she, remember like her conversation with Aubrey where she's like, I respect your gut, but no way in hell am I doing anything that you say.
Mm-hmm.
And like, they just essentially did this exact same thing to him. They silenced him. They took his voice away and like didn't value him at all. He felt that instantly. And so it's almost like, yes, he did this thing that was like, you know, like ran your mouth a little bit too much, but it instantly paid off in terms of like really solidifying him flipping on them.
Right. So that's an important thing on Survivor, of that you have to explore everybody's ideas, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And it's important also to, you know, give each idea its own due, whether or not you want to go with it or not.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I always like to talk about how then it's a red flag when you have an idea and people just very quickly say, okay, that's great. Let's do with that. I feel like that Tyson was the person that first said this to me, that's a sign that you're going to go home.
Yeah.
Where people just take your idea very quickly and there is no discussion about it.
Right. Yeah. I think there are a bunch of like clear red flags around that. Like if they take your idea really quickly, if they shut down your idea really quickly, like if they don't ask for your idea in the first place, there's like, it's a delicate balance, right? Like it's really, and this is where I think that Aubrey is so good,
yes,
where she can go into a conversation, and Sydney as well, where both of them can go into a conversation. I remember like the first time when they came together, I think it was last week, when like there was just this beautiful dance of like, I would be willing to vote out Debbie. I would be willing to vote out Debbie as well. I like your thinking. I really like you. I trust you. Do you want to vote out Debbie? I guess let's vote out Debbie. Great. And they both really wanted to vote out Debbie, but they both wanted to make sure that the other was super comfortable with it. And it happened.
Talk to me about Aubrey, because I think that you and she have a lot of traits that are similar. Have you seen any of yourself in Aubrey?
Yeah, it's interesting because she and I have met her a couple times as well. Mm-hmm. And she's the one of the players that in real life I feel that I relate to the most. Mm-hmm. We have a lot on paper. We have a lot in common. I feel like we're playing the game completely opposite in like to each other. And I say that actually with like 100% compliment towards her. She's playing the game, you know, like way better than I ever did. And I've learned a lot from watching her. And so, I mean, the things that we have in common, I don't know if they're well known, but like we both went to Brown University. We both played field hockey. We're both, you know, like nerdy, like we would both be on the Brains tribe, let's say.
Okay.
We're both not your traditional Survivor looking female.
Mm-hmm.
And she's really authentic. And I think she gets really vulnerable in her confessionals. And I got really vulnerable in my confessionals. I think that, you know, we really believe in connecting with people. I think the difference is that she approaches the game not talking about the game, or certainly in the beginning phase. She talked about the game in terms of people and human language. And like there was a beautiful scene of her and Debbie in the shelter when she had a confessional where she was talking about Peter condescending to her.
Mm.
And then cut to a scene with her and Debbie in the shelter where she's saying to Debbie, gosh, Peter's really condescending. Like, are we making the right choice here? Like, why does he talk down to us like that? Is it a female thing? Mm-hmm. She never once said, I want to vote out Peter. Let's vote out Peter instead. And like, you know, whereas I approach the game more like from what is called a game bot perspective,
right,
where I was just like, let's vote out Peter. Fuck that guy. Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. That's okay. Yeah, yeah. Almost maybe like if you took two of the brains women in Liz and Aubrey and combined them, I feel like that's you.
Yes, I agree with that. I accept that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean to be.
Yeah, no, I'm.
Like, a lot of people pick Liz to win the game.
Yeah. But I think that, the game bot meter, I totally related to Liz and her gameplay in that regard. And I think, but you're right, the side of Aubrey of like this, you know, really wanting to connect to people and like the authenticity and the vulnerability and stuff like that, I connect a lot more to.
Yeah.
Like Aubrey's like a lot like quirkier and nerdy and like in these, I'm not being all that articulate, but.
Yeah. But the thing about me and with Aubrey in terms of, you know, I didn't really see it in her early in the season. And then post swap, yeah. I was starting to say, boy, I really like where Aubrey's going.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if she has the killer instinct. And yeah. then at the point where, you know, she had that one snafu where it was that she wrote down Julia's name and then crossed it off. And again, this was sort of like, you know, a little bit wishy-washy. But then, and I guess that you have to go back to when Neil went out of the game. That it does seem like that this is where this new, where she said she compared herself to Natalie Anderson after Jeremy got voted out, that there is a new badassness yeah. to Aubrey's game, really, since that point in time, and I'm all in.
I didn't think that that's when her killer instinct was born. I think she had the killer instinct all along. I think that what was born at that point was divorcing herself from her brain's ties. I think mm-hmm. that was the point in the game where she said, like, you know what? Debbie's dragging me down. Neil left the game and like kept his idol. Like Joe is off doing whatever, like crunches and tanning. and I am my own man. And I think that that's what elevated. I think that married with the killer instinct that I thought was already there, like elevated her to this new level and gave her new opportunities and also made her seem less threatening because mm-hmm. now she doesn't seem, you know, necessarily so tightly tied to anybody.
I really feel like she found herself along the way in this game yeah. and who she is as a player, because yes. I don't think that she's probably this person in her real life.
In what way?
Well, I just kind of feel like, just like where we talk about where Suri was, as Shane Powers once so eloquently put, this is a gangster in an Oprah suit. Like, I don't know. I don't know if Aubrey knew that she was this type of person. I'm sure that in her day job as a social media manager, I don't think it requires her being this cutthroat. And I mean, you're making these moves in the game, and I don't want to short sell Sydney here, but I do yeah. feel like that last night, as far as the edit goes, it was much more Aubrey's story.
Yeah.
Like, I do think that it is a interesting thing where I don't know if she's ever experienced this side of herself before that we're seeing in the game.
Yeah. Interesting. I do. I don't think that in real life she's like cutthroat and, you know, like out to have people's heads on a platter.
Right. You know, a lot of times, but there's a lot of similarities between Survivor and real life, but yeah. you are put in situations on Survivor that are much crazier than situations you're put in real life. And I yeah. think that a lot of times, I didn't know I could do this. I didn't know I had this part of me existed.
Yeah. But I will say this. I think that like her real life personality is really coming through. Like, she is the type of person who does want to connect with people before she will mm-hmm. talk game. Right. And like, and so that's always how she approaches people. It's what we've been seeing where, you know, she's willing to also put herself out there to make those connections. She was willing to say to Ty, like, you know what? Like, sometimes I just think I'm in over my head and that, you know, that I'm not that good at this game and that I'm not cut out for this game. Like, she's willing to actually like make herself vulnerable and say those things, like even to other people, let alone in confessionals.
Yeah.
And I think that that's what she's like in real life as well. I think that's her actually saying like, oh, I think people go into the game thinking like, I can't appear vulnerable. I have to put on like a mask. And she's finding herself that like, I can be myself in this game. And the more that I am myself, the more success I'll find. That's how I'm seeing her grow. I'm seeing more and more of her personality shine through as these episodes unfold and as she's like almost, you know, becoming more effective.
Yeah. And I don't think it's a disingenuous thing either, where
correct.
She's just sort of like, oh, I'm going to tell people. Like, she's not like a Nick where, okay, I'm just going to tell this person what they want to hear.
Right.
She actually is going through this. I know you love Survivor Marquesas. Would you say that she has a younger Kathy Vavrick O'Brien-ness about her, where she was somebody who was having a meltdown in the first episode and really was sort of nursed back to health and then sort of got her legs under her and now is in a position where she's potentially going to be seen as the favorite going into this last stage of the game?
Yeah, I had not even thought about that comparison at all. And when
similar arc.
Also, I mean, like, similar in that I think they're both, and I say this with love because I love Kathy and I love Aubrey, like, they're both these neurotic women who overthink a lot of things, but ultimately, you know, they're there by themselves fighting for themselves. They both, you know, had some sort of revelation in the game at different points of the game and really coming into their own, favorites going into the end. And I totally see
it's not
it.
Not apples to apples.
No. But like, but there are similarities there that I hadn't thought of before.
Okay. And what about Sydney? Because I don't want to give her the short shrift here in all this, because she and Aubrey, only two people who have voted correctly these three votes.
Yeah. The whole game. They're the only two people who voted correctly every single vote of the entire game. If you don't count like the split, but like Aubrey was in on the correct side of the split the first time she went to tribal, but they voted correctly the entire game.
Yeah. And you know, you have Jason and Scott who, you know, following what they've been saying in the episodes and even like continuing into social media, really talking about how, you know, they've run the whole show here. Mm. But those two guys have voted the wrong side of the numbers, each of these votes after the merge.
Yes.
And now we have these three consecutive votes where they are sort of driving and what we can argue whether or not we like the moves or don't like the moves that have been made. But it's been their moves that have been made each of these three tribal councils.
Yeah, no, and I'm madly in love with Sydney.
Okay.
She's like one of my favorite characters ever.
Okay, great. Talk about Sydney.
Okay, so first of all, she's the whole package, brains, brawn, and beauty, right? She's gorgeous. I love her hair.
Her bathing suit doesn't get talked about enough.
The USA bathing suit?
Yes.
I mean, Haley Ford from Worlds Apart would love that. Haley is the real person who actually named our tribe America, by the way.
Yes.
And and the bottom, is it the bottoms are, or the top is reversible. So she sometimes has the blue and white stars and sometimes the red and white stripes on top. This is back to Sydney. And the bottoms, I believe, are always red and white stripe. Mm-hmm. So she's got like the, you know, multifaceted look and, she's everything. She's obviously very intelligent, but she's also, you know, like, God, she's so jiffable. Like there's this, a fan who I believe is, I don't know if she's a rap patron, but a rap fan as well. Anna Paula. Do you know her?
Yes.
And she is like a GIF master.
Yes.
And she has made me just like a million GIFs of Sydney from like the last three episodes where Sydney's making all kinds of face and she's saying amazing things like simmer down. Like from this last episode, oh my God, and this when she was like, and then we can, what did she say about Julia? And then we can vote Julia's traitor ass out of this game.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just like, she's so.
So you love her as a character.
Love her as a character. Also love her as a player. And that's the other thing is like, because I think that like, you know, she played I think, you know, take note, all you potential 34 all-stars out there. I think the thing that's brilliant about Sydney's game is that she's quiet in the first half. She just like went with the flow. She, you know, like dug in on a couple of connections and then just shut her mouth. Like during all that, you know, Jason Scott, Alicia drama, even with Jen, like she.
And I'm like, brr.
Just hunkered down and stayed quiet.
Like, she was really good in that.
Do you remember that confessional where she was talking about like her recuperation?
Yeah.
Like, they're just messing with my recuperation. God, I love her.
She was very, very good. So when you're talking about for other players need to take notice of her, where she was just sort of like during the really crazy moments. Yeah. That's almost like the advice I would give somebody in a Big Brother season of, hey, I'd say if you're going into Big Brother, go in the Big Brother house, go to sleep for the first month.
Yeah.
You can only vote yourself out in the first month of Big Brother.
Yeah.
You can't win the game then.
Yeah.
So you feel like that's something that Survivor players should be doing.
Yeah, I think most people in Survivor should go in, but again, and particularly for an All-Star season as well, but you just go in.
You know, Shereen, once upon a time, I thought that was the way to go in an All-Star season of, let me just go there, let me try to keep my mouth shut, and nobody will notice me.
Yeah.
It doesn't, again, I could have done a better job with that, but it's not always the best way to go.
Maybe it's like the better way to go for women.
Maybe.
Because
maybe.
I mean, it's like the Kelly Wentworth game.
Right.
It was.
Maybe nobody will notice me if I don't say anything.
Or like even like Kelly Wigglesworth, mm-hmm. right? Like you stay quiet in the beginning.
Yeah.
Nobody notices you. But then you've got to turn it on at the merge because otherwise you won't have respect at the end. Right.
Yeah.
So suddenly we hit the merge. Suddenly that first vote comes to fruition and Sydney Bam immediately makes a move, immediately starts like building up her resume.
Yeah.
Don't pick me, boo.
Yeah. And she makes the flip away from them. You know, it was interesting also that Scott felt like that in the exit interview that he was talking about how he wanted to get rid of, he didn't want to keep Sydney around for that long, that it seemed like that Jason was more driving the bus to keep Sydney around. He wanted to keep Jennifer around. Jennifer was Scott's person. Mm-hmm. And I think that he felt like that maybe the game takes a different direction if they keep Jennifer around instead of ultimately then at one of those tribal councils that they go to. I guess they vote off Alicia there and then I guess maybe Sydney.
And then potentially Sydney at the next one.
At the next tribal council there. And then they go into the merge with Jennifer, who he feels like that maybe isn't going to be switching like Sydney did to go vote with Aubrey.
I don't know. I mean, I think based on the fact that Jennifer wanted to flip on them before Sydney ever did.
Well, but she said, but she didn't because she felt close with Scott.
Fan fiction.
Fan fiction.
I'm like a storyteller. That's what I do.
Yeah. I guess that going back to that point in the game that it was that Jennifer was Scott's tighter person and Sydney was Jason's tighter person.
Yep.
And Jason won out. Yep. I think that Scott got a little tinge of maybe that might have been the better way to go.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think that for Scott, it would have been the better way to go to keep Jen, but, you know, he didn't.
What are you going to do? All right. So that between Sydney, talk about how that she is in a good spot to win the game. Do you feel that way?
Last episode, this is like what I think is flawed about trying to read the edit because last episode,
did you get caught up in that?
I have taken joy in like analyzing the edits and doing this so-called edgic thing.
Yes.
But I care more about the storytelling and less about the predictive aspect of it. So I think it's just dumb to try to predict the winner because I think that, I mean, the producers are trying to tell a story, right? And they're purposely trying, and like, they may not always, you know, be the best at it, but they're trying to be on their A game as storytellers and like, and by that logic, they are purposefully trying to mislead you as to who's going to win.
Mm-hmm.
And so Michelle was getting, you know, I think a lot of people were giving Michelle credit like all season long as getting this so-called winner's edit just because she didn't seem to be a pivotal player, yet she would keep getting these key confessionals out of nowhere. And yet, if you're also paying attention to what's not in the edit, you're also seeing that like nobody's really talking about her and what like the few times she's talked about, it's not necessarily all that positively. And especially in secret scenes, people are talking about how Michelle sucks at challenges and how, you know, like, they knew she was going to drop out of that foot challenge for the food. And those are not good signs for people to respect you at the end to give you votes because people care about those things.
Yeah.
And so, whereas, you know, with Sydney, when people talk about Sydney, it's about how tough she is and how strong she is. Same thing with Aubrey, right? Like Nick had that confessional about like out of nowhere, just like Aubrey's the kind of girl that I would hang out with above any of these girls. And so I think that Sydney and Aubrey are getting this better like FT, like final tribal council, who's going to win votes from whom edit.
Mm-hmm.
And outside of the edit, if I'm actually just counting the votes based on people, I'm counting more votes right now for Aubrey than I am for Sydney, but I'm counting a few for Sydney as well.
When we go back to Debbie during the season, that she said a number of times, I really want to see a woman win this game. It's very important to me that a woman wins this game. Did you look at that at all, like back in Worlds Apart, where Lindsay on multiple occasions said a blue-collar person is going to win this game? Did you look at that as the same sort of prophecy, or is this just wishful thinking?
No, I saw it as a prophecy just because it wasn't just like the one-time name drop. It was mentioned, I think, now four times.
Mm-hmm.
And then again, if you take all these to me, they're all just signals. If you take that as a signal, the four time mention of a woman winning, and you take as a signal the fact that Aubrey and Sydney are getting the most strategic, you know, strong edits, and the fact that Michelle is randomly getting these like these strong confessionals, you're seeing that the winner contenders are probably a woman.
Mm-hmm.
You're seeing a woman's going to win. I think a woman's going to win.
Mm-hmm.
I could be wrong.
Yeah. Do you have a pick of those three women that we're talking about?
I oscillate between Sydney and Aubrey.
Okay.
And after this past episode, so after last week, I thought for sure it was Sydney and Aubrey would be a final tribal council loser.
Mm-hmm.
After this week, I think for sure it's Aubrey and Sydney is going to be the FTC loser. I'm worried based on the way that they were showing Scott talking about her. And it was so out of the blue because we haven't seen Sydney be brooding or anything.
Right. I wanted to ask him about that. And because he said that, well, I think that maybe 3 more days, if you know, then everybody could see Sydney's true self.
Right.
She'll reveal herself to them. They'll see the same Sydney that I see. And I really wanted to ask him, like, well, what is that, Sydney?
What is that?
Yeah.
That's like bitter Scott. This is, you know, like... when a guy can't handle like a girl rejecting him, mm-hmm. like, and then needs to, you know, like send like angry texts at her, like, mm-hmm. well, you were just a whatever anyway.
Yeah.
No, I think that he's just bitter. And I think first of all, that those words reflected more upon him than mm-hmm. about her. He was brooding as he was calling her brooding. And secondly, I also think though, I mean, like you did get shots of her kind of like with her hoodie on and looking like dour in the morning or whatever out of the blue. We've never seen that side of Sydney before. And it made me think like, oh, is this like what's to come in a final tribal council? Like, is Scott going to rip her a new one? Like, it, you know, are, yeah. are people going to say like, are just be bitter towards her? I mean, that would be really sad. I'd be so sad about that.
Yeah. So let me ask you about these, this other pair of women in the game, in Michelle and Julia, because I've been more impressed with Julia over these last couple of episodes, especially last night, that I thought that she came off again really strong. And I feel like that she seemed like she's really playing hard, especially for somebody who's 18 years old out there in the game. What have you thought about Julia specifically?
So for Julia specifically, I think that she's got all the raw talent to be mm-hmm. a good player. I think she's smart. She's reading the game correctly. She's like building good connections with people, but she's also not being sly about it at all. You can't slick a slickster.
Yeah. Right.
Like, I mean, she's so overt about it, like shoving it in people's faces, like be a little more subtle. But I mean, you know, but she's 19 or was she 18 at the time?
Yeah. Because she has a good plan in my mind of that. And I really like this for Sydney, which is why I didn't love this move that she made, the flip that she made a couple of weeks ago, was I really love the idea of sitting next to Jason and Scott at the end. And she seems like she's the person, she's sort of like that, got the dollar signs in her eyes yeah. of I'm going to be the modern day Natalie White. I'm going to sit next to these guys and I'm going to win the game.
So here's what I think about that. I think it's really, really dangerous when you're out there, particularly as a young woman already fighting for the respect of all these people who are a lot older than you mm-hmm. and a lot wiser than you, or thinking that they're wiser than you, to be clear. I think that like, and let's talk specifically about the Sydney case. I think if Sydney sticks with those guys and goes all the way to the end, she runs the risk of people on the jury saying like, you were just riding their coattails. You didn't make a move yourself. You just stuck with these guys. You can't ever guarantee that they're going to get a Russell Hance reception at the end.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are very few Russell Hances in Survivor history. Typically that kind of guy gets credit for drag. I mean, like, look at Worlds Apart, like how, you know, on the jury, people were saying like, oh, Carolyn was dragged to the end by all these men, which, you know, wasn't true. She mm-hmm. got herself there. But like, but the more this dominant, you know, the egocentric man is the one who gets more credit for making big moves and playing the game. And I think that that's, you know, why Sydney had to divorce herself from that a little bit to show that she is playing her own game. And I think that like Julia runs a similar risk. The more that these guys, you know, like sabotage camp and do these things to piss people off, like that makes it a better and better move for Julia. But you know, I think it's like, it's really hard even this far out to call who's like, who you're going to beat in the end.
Mm-hmm. I think that there's also an interesting split between this pair of Julia and Michelle. And it does seem as though Michelle, while she is a pair with Julia, that is a tight pair. We see that Julia seems like she's more linked up with Scott and Jason.
Yeah.
And then Michelle seems closer with Aubrey and Sydney. And I don't know how that really reconciles itself after this big battle between those two sides this week.
Yeah, I don't think anybody can call it until we see the episode next week. But the way that I've been reading it is it looks to me like Julia is willing to sell out Michelle to go with the guys, whereas it looks like Michelle is not willing to sell out Julia based on Aubrey's, you know, confessional about Michelle, that she can't see what's really going on with Julia.
But Michelle got left in the dark in this episode.
Yeah. Right?
Was this the potential downside with this move, where now Michelle might not be? Now, again, you don't need her vote technically at 7.
Yeah.
Where if you have Aubrey, Sydney, Joe, and Ty, that's 4. There's only 3 on the other side, and then Ty's extra vote is still on their side. So it's not even like that they could tie it up. So that, and I don't mean that as a pun, but do they, have they potentially lost Michelle by keeping her in the dark about this?
Potentially. I don't see Michelle as that kind of player. I think after this vote, again, like, I think it depends on the kind of player Michelle is, and I think it depends on the kind of player like Aubrey and Sydney are. And I think we can speak to Aubrey and Sydney a little bit more than we can about Michelle here. We're gonna learn a lot about Michelle in this next episode. I think Aubrey and Sydney can easily go to Michelle and say, you know, hey, we knew how close you were to Julia, and we just didn't trust her. She was clearly feeding them all the information, blah blah. But like, we still want to work with you. We still see an end game with you. But look, like, and now Michelle no longer has the numbers to be offended that they don't trust Julia. Right now, Michelle's just kind of got to keep her mouth shut and be like, "Yep, I'm with you. I'll cut Julia loose if you want."
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, let me go to the end with you. And so, yeah, so I think that, like, that's the correct way to play it for Michelle to look around and see, I don't want to see it. I don't want to sit at the bottom with Julia and Jason. So if Ty really is with those other three, because those three are, I think Joe, Sydney, and Aubrey are super tight. I can't imagine any of them breaking away from each other.
Because Joe's like the perfect guy for Aubrey and Sydney to bring to the final three.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, nobody, I mean, like, when you're even talking about like the Girls Alliance, nobody's even really calling out that Joe is part of the Girls Alliance, right?
Right. And so Ty, I really think, made a lateral move from, at best, he was 4th, but, you know, maybe he had a shot to be 3rd with Jason and Scott. He has no shot to be 3rd.
Yeah. Well, he does have a shot, and I'll tell you that shot.
What is it?
Do you remember Joe's ET finger that like nobody's talking about anymore?
Mm-hmm.
And Joe is like, I mean, we've gotten like, Joe got slammed in the head of the challenge, like bleeding down his face.
Yeah, but could you say the same thing about Aubrey and her thigh, and she has that thing?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I guess where I'm going with this is like, somebody could still get medevaced.
That could be, but I think that's probably something that we can say more from, that we can say that knowing that this was billed as the toughest season ever, that's so grueling.
Sure, sure, sure. Oh, you're saying like from Ty's perspective, you don't know that at all. Sure.
Right.
But I'm saying like from our perspective, analyzing what's happening, I think Ty does have a shot at making it to the final three.
Yes.
Oh, and you know what else? You know what else? By Ty doing this to, like, Ty has just made an enemy of Scott and Jason.
Yes.
And so he's becoming more appealing to take to the end in that regard. Like, you know, people are going to think that he is,
those guys will destroy him. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's interesting. So what do you do now if you're Aubrey and Sydney moving forward? Okay, so now it's the final 7.
Mm-hmm.
What's the move? Do you take Jason out, or do you start to look at Jason as somebody who is another attractive final tribal council person, or do you not even need that because you have Joe?
It depends on how aggressively it, like, you want to get to the end with your like Philip Shepherd and Russell kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think, okay, if I'm Sydney and Aubrey, now I'm looking clear shot at Julia to really free Michelle away from her. Because like, Michelle and Julia still seem like a pair, and you really want to get them away from each other. Whereas Jason is a one-man island and seemingly a lot more beatable than Julia at the end now. So I think, you know, next tribal, if they can, get rid of Julia first. If Julia has immunity, you know, then Jason looks like, Jason reminds me a lot of Rodney in the game right now from Worlds. Again,
it's your season. It's your season.
It's also recent, right? It's like the most recent season that didn't have returners.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember everybody on Worlds Apart wanted to go to the end with Rodney, and they were so sure that they would beat him because he was miserable to live with around camp. However, he made everybody laugh all the time, and particularly with such a young jury that valued that quality in people. Like, you know, like, no one was going to vote for a Sierra or a Carolyn over Rodney. Like, Rodney made everybody laugh, and that goes a long way out there, despite being so miserable to live with. And I think the same is true of Jason, where I think that he can at least say, like, I played aggressively, you know, just because he's like a big, strong man who won some challenges and has a loud voice and actually had an idol, despite the fact that it was Sydney who found the idol.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's so appealing to take to the end on the surface that I think you want to take somebody like that out because everybody's going to screw over everybody else to take him to the end.
Yeah, I just think he's too dangerous. He's too dangerous. Leave around here. So yeah. I do like what you're saying about Julia, but I think he's got to go. I think you're messing with fire if you are going to keep him around for like to the end of the game.
You think he's more dangerous than Julia?
I know I'm with you on that. I think that would be okay. Let's split up Michelle and Julia.
Yeah.
And let's not have them as a pair anymore in the game because that becomes a tighter and tighter bond as you go along. And then, you know, you have the looming threat that maybe they could go inside with him, especially the next vote's going to be 6. So I feel like let's get at least that threat out of the mix here at 7. And then I feel like, but I think you have to go after him at 6.
Yeah, no, I'm 100% with you there. And I think that, and again, for number, it's like, I think people will want to go to the end with him too much. And that's why you want to take him out. But also he's such a wild card. Mm-hmm. You have no idea what this guy's going to do.
And for Sydney and for Aubrey, I think that they're both big jury threats. Now, the question, I guess, is, do they start to look at each other and say, I can't beat this person. I can't beat this person. Yeah. I know if I could win. I know if this person wasn't here, I could definitely win. I think that those are the two biggest jury threats in my mind, Aubrey and Sydney. Do you think that they start to look at each other and say, well, I can beat anybody else here, but not you? Sort of like a Malcolm and Denise.
Yeah. But the question is, when do they make that move? And do they do it as late as a Malcolm and Denise, or do they do it earlier like a Tony? Because I think that they also have, they clearly now have so much trust in one another, and that's just a currency that you can't, you know, barter for.
Yeah.
And so I think that they have room to still go a little bit further with that trust. And then quite frankly, like, you end up in a final four scenario where whoever wins immunity essentially gets to dictate the vote and gets to take out whichever jury threat they want. And then you're riding your, if you're Aubrey or Sydney, and you're the one who didn't win immunity, you're riding your social game. And you're just saying, like, I hope that she just likes me enough as a person that she doesn't even consider me.
It'll be fun to see exactly where it goes. And I do think that part of why I did not like the sabotage from a gameplay standpoint, it didn't offend me, but I don't think it was a good move. I know a lot of people saw it and it offended them. It feels like it has no place in the game. That's not why it bothered me. What I felt like I did not like about it was that I feel like it really united that group together.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, in talking with Scott, he said that Michelle was really offended by what was happening. Where Julia wasn't, Julia saw it as more of a gameplay thing.
Yeah.
Where Michelle really was turned off by that. So now I kind of feel like for Sydney and for Aubrey, I wonder if it's sort of like, okay, let's ride this thing out. Let's finish the job against this group, which sort of like banded us together.
Yeah. I'm with you on that also. Like, I don't think it's evil or bad or anything to steal equipment, destroy the camp, destroy food, whatever. I think that happens a lot more than we even get to see.
Mm-hmm.
It happened on both of the seasons that I was on and didn't make air.
What happened?
So, like, in particular, this is one of the reasons why a lot of people didn't like living with Rodney, is Rodney stole all the food all the time. So Rodney started, like, so overtly stealing all the food.
Well, there's a little bit of that in terms of, like, when you guys first merged and, you know, he was getting upset that I think you were cutting the salami slices and...
we did have a... Well, no, because what he was doing was he was trying to, like, peel the skin off of the salami and, like, ripping off big chunks of the salami while doing it. And so he was wasting a lot of food, plus getting his grimy fingers up in everybody's meat. And he was doing it so that he could be closer to the food and eat more secretly.
Right.
But even aside from that, like, in the middle of the night, he would wake up and, like, go to our merge food stash and just steal a bunch of it. And it got to a point where Jen and I said, no more. Like, we're clearly on the bottom. Like, we're going to be next. We don't see, like, a glimmer of hope here. And Jen and I ended up stealing, like, almost all of the rest of the food, burying it secretly, like, throughout camp. And then sometimes we would bring Sierra with us to eat some of it, and other times we would just go eat it by ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
It was a countermeasure to what Rodney was doing.
Mm-hmm.
But it was also like, hey, you know what? Like, you're not gonna be respectful towards us. You guys are gonna treat us like we're on the outs. Like, then we're gonna eat all the food. We're gonna make you as miserable as possible. And also, we tried using it to, you know, to build bonds with Sierra to get her to flip on them, though that didn't work.
Yeah. But the idea wasn't so much the theory of, if I create chaos, then people won't be making the decisions that are in their own best interests.
Well,
which is sort of the Hance doctrine. And in the Russell Hance, not so much the Brandon. The Brandon Hance is, hey, you're going to vote me out. I'm going to, you know, you think you can control the game. Well, you know, I'm just going to go loco around here.
Well, the other element of it was we thought that people might get so angry. Everybody blamed Rodney. When all that food went missing, everybody blamed Rodney. And that's what we wanted. We wanted them to get so angry at Rodney that they would then vote irrationally and vote him out because they knew that they couldn't trust anything around camp at all anymore with him. Mm-hmm. And then secondly, like I said, to win Sierra over, which didn't work. And then thirdly, just as revenge, because screw them.
So that we had, you know, this big moral dilemma with Ty from this past week with doing that. And then he ultimately came around. Did you feel like that for Ty? Were you disappointed in him when he was one of the people that was putting out the fire? Did you feel like that was so out of character for him?
No.
Yeah.
I mean, like, was it out of character for him? Yes. And if anything, like, I felt bad for him because it looked like it pained him so much to do it. And that's why I felt bad for him. And that's like... But that's it. Like I think the funny thing there is, you know, he was like a self-proclaimed bad liar, and yet he got away with it. Everybody just like assumed that it was Scott that did it again, and so in that sense, it was almost great because it like pushed people against Scott and Jason even more.
Yeah,
and he was still in the clear, and he was seen as this guy of like, Ty, what are you doing with them? It doesn't make sense for you to be with them. So no, I didn't think it was bad. I saw the backlash that he was getting on Twitter.
Was it bad? I thought that from what I saw, I thought Ty got away pretty, you know, free and clear with all of that.
I saw some backlash and it was ugly.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Well, redemption for Ty this week. Now, so let's go back to Jason and let's just talk from a game point of view for where does he go from here? Do you see a move for him? Can you see a way out of this for where he goes other than say like, hey, I'm the best person to bring to the end?
Yeah, if I'm Jason, I grab Julia, I grab, you know, I mean, I guess like any of, like, I don't think.
I think the biggest problem for him, and at least the Scott and Jason version of him, you know, we saw when Scott was away from Jason, we saw a kinder, gentler version of Scott. Will we see the same with Jason, where we see a new Jason, a nicer Jason? More of a Kyle Jason when we see him without Scott. Will he be more like amenable and ready to play ball? But the problem is like with Sydney, when she went away from them, she flipped against them. It wasn't like, hey, Sid, can we talk this through? Yeah. Like, why didn't we see eye to eye? It was like, okay, you're dead to us.
Right.
You have to figure now he's going to say to Ty, Ty, you're dead to me. Don't even look at me. But now you're kind of running out of people. So who's going to flip?
Yeah, no, and that's I worry about that for Jason. I think that if I'm Jason and I'm going back to that camp, I think like, you know, try to pitch myself, as like the, you know, as the unbeatable or as the beatable goat at the end and try to make amends with Sydney, try to, you know, make amends with Ty. Like he's now powerless. He doesn't have an idol. Like he's got no legs to stand on. And that can be appealing. Right. If he just says like, hey, you know what? Like, I'll vote however you tell me to vote and I'll do. But I don't think that he has that in him.
Yeah.
I think that he like even from the preview for next week, it seems like he's really pissed at Ty and wants to get revenge.
Yeah. The big wild card for him is that, OK, does another idol get hidden in the game? And so for him, can he find this next idol? And does he go all out to try to get that idol? And what can he do with it?
You know, maybe the move for him is to go to Aubrey and he and Aubrey seem to have a bit of a bond this last episode. Maybe he goes to Aubrey because Aubrey has Joe 100%. Maybe he goes to two of them and says like, hey, you know, like get Julia out this vote. Like she's a bigger threat. Like I'll vote however you tell me to vote. Like, I don't need to be in on the plan, whatever. And then when it's down to six, the three of us band together and do something crazy.
Yeah. All right. So I would not be doing my due diligence as a journalist if I didn't discuss this with you because it was such a controversial subject this season in terms of everything that went on with Alicia. And, you know, I didn't really see too much of your take on social media, but it was such a hot button thing. It just, you know, similarly in Worlds Apart, where people had strong opinions about the comments galore. People were unhappy with how it was treated on the show. Some people unhappy with how it was treated on the podcast. Mm-hmm. But again, I will say before we get into this, we are having an adult conversation about a complicated issue. Did you, looking back at how that all went down with Jason and Scott and Alicia, did you feel like that was similar to the what went on with you and Will in Worlds Apart?
No, I thought it was similar to what went on with me and Joaquin and Tyler. And you didn't get to see much of it in the edit, but like Tyler in particular talked to me the way that Scott talked to Alicia. And like particularly telling her to shut up in the challenges. Tyler told me to shut up all the time in just like a really condescending way. And so for me, I really felt for her deeply in that way. Mm-hmm. I thought Scott in particular was just disgusting.
Yeah. with what that this is. I just want to be specific about. So what was disgusting, what he was saying to her during the in that challenge where
I think just the way that he was like never gave her like from the I mean, we saw even in the premiere, he was just talking so negatively about her. He never gave her a chance. He judged her based on appearances, which happened to me as well. And then even like after she was proving herself, right, we saw her actually make a fire. We saw her, even forced into these, like the puzzle situation, even at that first challenge when she was very clear that she, you know, doesn't think she's going to do well at the puzzle. Mm-hmm. Like she was at least trying hard and doing what she could. And Scott just never, ever gave her a chance. He never, seemed to acknowledge her contributions. And then he just kept getting more and more condescending. The thing is like, she seems like she might have been annoying, but there's a huge difference between being annoying and being cruel. And I thought he was being cruel and he like was silencing her and not giving her a voice. And then his whole thing about talking about, you know, being a team player and like bragging about his NBA days, it was just like, it sounded like, you know, an insecure sixth grader shoving somebody at recess. Like,
Now you sound like you are more. You seem like you're talking mostly about Scott than Jason. Do you see a difference between the two?
I do. I mean, I think that Jason was still. It's tough. I think I'm a lot more conflicted about Jason.
Mm-hmm. Why?
Oh, it's so tough. Like. I'll start with the positives, right? Mm-hmm. I think that, he had this confessional talking about having like daughters and how he, young daughters, and he wants them to grow up and be independent and be educated and be, independent women. And then on the flip side, like I wanted him to then take that energy and try to, if anything, like, mentor Alicia or like channel it in a positive way. And instead he just seemed to like judge her like, well, she's just not there. She's just not the kind of woman that I want my kids to turn out to be. And he wrote her off kind of thing. But then again, like on the positive side, there were times when he did give her credit for starting the fire and you could actually see, and this is like, for him, it's more of a style thing where even when he's being kind, he's still rough. Like he put his arm around her and he said, what did he say? He was like, y'all motherfuckers are welcome. And it was funny and it was cute and he was, lifting her up for it. So I see it for him. It's more of a style thing. That said, then like he also like joked about throwing his skin in the pot for her to drink. And that was disgusting.
Yeah.
And so with him, I feel a lot more conflict, and I'm not saying that I'm pro him, but I am saying that I think Scott is a lot worse.
Okay.
And I think Scott brings out the worst in Jason as well.
I think that the two guys together, I think, are probably the most toxic. I thought I had a really nice conversation with Scott this morning on the exit interview. I just think that there's different sides to all these people. And that's why, some of the listeners got upset with me because I kept saying when we talked about this the first time around, I disavow the actions. But for me, it's almost like that I want to disavow the actions, but not necessarily the people.
Yeah.
Because that we're talking about, you know, three-dimensional real people that have, you know, some ugliness to their personality under extreme circumstances, but we don't know these people in real life also.
Yeah.
So it's a very complicated thing, and we're seeing a very small snippet of what's going on. I know that people are going to say, oh, you're defending them, and I'm not. We're just talking about something that's really complicated, and it's not a cartoon. It's not like that this is, okay, this is Gargamel. He's evil 100% of the time, and this is, you know, Superman, and he's good unless it's the, you know, Zack Snyder Superman.
Yeah. And can I say something else that also, like, makes it so conflicting for me, particularly with Jason, actually? But I'll even say, like, after, like, one of those particularly bad bullying episodes, I think Jason and Scott tweeted a photo with Michelle and Julia saying, like, you know, see, we don't hate women kind of thing, like, just because they're hanging out with two women.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, you know, people who are, like, bullies are, like, or, you know, or misogynists or whatever, you know, you want to call them, they're not that way to all people. Like, these people have wives and kids, and they're, I'm sure they're great to their wives and kids. It's when they're bad to somebody that they can so easily pick on. Like,
yeah,
that's how I'm looking at them. Like, I mean, you know, like, to make a really extreme example here, just for clarity, not comparing them to this at all, but I'm saying, like, Hitler was amazing to Christians, but horrible to Jews. Like, what's he going to do? Like, pull a couple Christians into the photo and be like, see, I'm such a good guy. These are my friends. I have friends. Like, it's like, no, you were still a horrible, evil, disgusting human.
Yeah. Under one set of circumstances, but that doesn't mean you're like that all the time.
Right. And so the other thing, so with Jason, was like that scene where he's helping Sydney. So I was watching that episode with my boyfriend. My boyfriend was like, he looks like Jesus and the lamb, and like pulled up a photo of Jesus holding the lamb, and it looked like Jason holding up Sydney.
Yeah.
And like, it was so loving and tender. And my boyfriend, you know, defended Jason. He's like, see, I think he's just a really good guy. He's just bad to Alicia. And I'm like, and for me, that makes him worse, that he's capable of so much love,
mm-hmm.
but that he can, and yet he can be so, you know, I mean, it was more of Jay, like I said, more Scott, I think, but like, but that they can be so mean or cruel to a human being that they should really show compassion towards.
Yeah. It's tough. You know,
it's tough.
That episode, that was my least fun episode
to talk
about for, you know, a variety of reasons. You know, that's not the kind of reasons why I talk about this show, and I talk about it so much more than any other human possibly should. It just is, you know, it's not a fun thing to explore. And even though it is part of this game, you know, what are you going to do about it?
Yeah.
I mean, you feel like, is there anything that should or can be done about it?
About the show, or
where we talk about, like, you know, that this is a show where ugly incidents can happen, not singling people out is there anything where you know, people had said, I don't think that this should be part of the show, in terms of they don't have to show it if it happens and things like that? I mean, is there anything that could be done in your mind?
I think that it's disingenuous to the story if you hide it. I think that it's important sometimes to show it, depending on how bad it is and depending on how much it impacts the game and the ultimate story. I think to just arbitrarily hide it because it's an ugly thing is naive.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of like what there is to do about it, I mean, I think ultimately it just has to do with the way different personalities come together on this show. And like, I don't think it has to do with like the extreme. I don't think it has to do with like, oh, they're starving and they're sleep deprived. I think these are excuses for people's like genuine personality. I think that your real personality is coming out there. And maybe it is the worst version of yourself, but it's still part of yourself. And but like the show wouldn't be as explosive if they didn't cast contentious people or bigoted people or, you know, people with these like contentious personalities.
And I do feel like that, you know, where there's that point, you know, we have this whole ugly incident that happens between you and Will in Worlds Apart. And then there's that point where does anybody think that Will shouldn't get his letter? And then you raise your hand. I mean, that was such a great TV moment in terms of what happened. And just like, you know, we went through all this stuff with Scott and Jason and Alicia. And I think then last night you have this moment where Scott ends up getting voted out of the game.
Yeah.
And I do think that, you know, it's hard, you know, in the moment where it's like these things are difficult to process when they're happening, that I do think that sometimes like the payoff to the story is also, you know, very compelling.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and it's funny because for me, when we were out there, like I didn't think that that letter moment was that big of a deal. It was just like, he just didn't get his letters. We've only got like 10 days left in the game.
Mm-hmm.
It's like not a big deal. And like, you know, the fact that it was like, that it came off as such compelling TV was like really fascinating to watch. I realized like how fuzzy it all was for me. Like I raised my left hand. I'm not even left-handed. I'm right-handed. Like mm-hmm. what was going on in my head in that moment? I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But it did, at least like from a storytelling perspective, it did feel like there was comeuppance. I, as a human, never felt like there was any real comeuppance.
Mm-hmm.
At least in this case, like Scott had like a, there was like a powerful moment of him leaving the game with Jason's idol in his pocket, and it probably mm-hmm. like really burned him. And so I felt more gratification like in this season, you know, particularly like I'm sure Alicia was, I hope Alicia was watching that episode and just like,
we don't know. Yeah.
But it was like we were rooting so hard for him to fall, and then fall he did.
Yeah,
it was wonderful TV.
Yeah, and just to go back to the point of this being, you know, three dimensional people, like then yeah. you watch the Ponderosa video, and it's super emotional. You know, Scott is getting letters about his mom who's going through, you know, cancer, and you know,
I forgot to watch his Ponderosa video.
And then your heart goes out to him. In those moments, the same thing with Jason talking yeah. about, you know, his family daughters. and your heart goes out to him with that. And that's why this is, you know, a mature conversation comment section. I'm talking to you right now.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's very hard to, you know, just paint with one brush of, you know, this is this person now.
Yeah. No, I agree with you.
It's tough. All right. Anything else about this season that you want to touch on before we get into some of these questions I have for you? Any other moments from earlier this season that really stood out to you?
Let me think for a second.
Debbie. Talk to me about Debbie.
Oh, my Lord. Debbie. Debbie. What I love about Debbie is she's such a huge character. She's like wonderful TV because she's so quirky and saying just really unique, oddball things all the time. And she never, ever shits on people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she's, for the most part, very positive about everybody.
She did say all the guys are wankers.
I mean, how funny is that, though, right? and even the language that she uses when she does speak negatively is like, funny and quirky and positive in a way. And, like, I feel like the most negative thing she ever said about somebody was, you know, calling some of these guys narcissists, like Nick and Peter. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, if that's the worst thing that she's going to say about people, like, it's refreshing to watch her because she has this positive energy about her. That said, like I wish that she was more receptive to her own flaws. Like it's clear that she was not collaborative, that she always needed to get her way. And I just hope that one day she can absorb that. Because I'm sure she'll return. I'm sure they'll have her back.
She told me the other day she was retired.
I didn't believe that for one second. I hope that she has enough time to digest the season before she goes back to actually change her game in a way to still be quirky, fun Debbie. This is the thing, like, I think from her Ponderosa video, her knee-jerk reaction to her own gameplay is she thinks that the mistake she made or that the thing that she would change in her game is that like next time around she would align with, you know, the jerks, the people that she had written off.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, no, your game was fine. You just weren't collaborative. Like, just be collaborative next time. And I would hate to see her go back and be, you know, embracing jerks and voting out nice people as her way of winning the game.
Does Debbie have winner upside? Like, could you imagine a scenario where she comes back and could go on to win a game?
If she's a collaborative Debbie, yes.
I mean, Coach, who she said was her parallel, took him three times. That the second time that he came back, he was even wackier than the first time.
Yeah.
Where it was like that you almost had a coach where it was like, hey, now I know what's going to get camera time.
Yeah.
I'm going to be Debbie on steroids here. Yeah. And it wasn't really until the third time, and maybe you could argue because he was with people who, like a sounding board like Sophie and Albert, who were able to keep him in check more, or maybe he also made some adjustments that's like, hey, I'm going to tone it back a little bit and try to be more down to earth and not be as kooky. And, you know, we didn't see as much Coach Chi in South Pacific and stuff like that. Do you think that it will take a second loss before?
Yes.
Yeah.
I do think that. And I think, you know, and I've said this about my own game. I think like a big thing for me is I went back too soon and I wasn't. The problem with going back really soon is that you haven't had time to reflect and you haven't had time to like stop caring. You still, you care too much, right? You care at like the 150% amount, whereas you need to like get away from the game and meditate on it and accept your flaws in addition to, because there's always going to be bad luck and good luck involved. You have to accept what was the luck and also accept what the flaws in your game were and like, and digest, and also just stop caring at the 150% level. Stop wanting, you know, airtime or whatever it is that you're going for. Get that distance and then go back as coach 3.0 kind of thing. I think that, you know, again, like based on Debbie's Ponderosa and her and what little I saw of her exits, like I think she needs that second loss to really absorb.
I do think that there is something to that where, you know, the time that you come back and don't care about the TV show and only are just thinking about the game, not necessarily what's going to be good TV or thing. Like if you are coming back and thinking about TV, like I'm trying to think of maybe Cochran the second time. I'm not sure, you know, exactly, you know, how, what, you know, it's hard to get into his head. But I think that, you know, the more you're thinking about the TV part of the game and what's going to be good, I think then that's a recipe for disaster. And I do think like even like Jeremy last season, I do think that he wasn't so much concerned with the show as he was just sort of like coming in terms of the thing. I just want to win.
Yeah. Well, he also, I think, like, he's one of the few people who took the correct lesson from the first time that he played, where he was like, I was too out there and I need to be quieter and like less visible. And again, like in the early phases of the game, so that I'm not perceived as such a big threat. And as a result, he was just this calming force that everybody wanted to work with and everybody enjoyed being around. And it's true. And he had his meat shield and he was very collaborative and go with the flow.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, and I think, you know, again, like I think other people just like take the wrong lesson from their game if they go back too soon or if they don't have a real loss. In fact, speaking of which, that's the other thing that I was going to say for like Sydney and Aubrey. It actually concerns me that they've never had a loss, because I think one of the biggest learning moments that you can have in this game on the show is experiencing a loss and seeing where you went wrong. Because I think that all the signals are almost always
a
there.
A loss in like your torch going out or one of your allies going out.
Yeah, if you're so lucky, being on the wrong side of the vote.
Okay. Because, I mean, Aubrey to some degree had this with Neil going out.
Oh, yeah, no. I mean, like actually like in a voting scenario. I think that like once you've experienced a blindside or just a vote that you weren't expecting.
Yeah.
Like then you have this moment where you look back and you can realize like, oh, these were the data signals that I was getting that I was ignoring that told me what was going to happen. And that were like, and I remember like Tyson made a comment, I forget when, but like on RHAP one time where he said, I would love to play against like one time winners because they
it was
never-
the question was asked. It was during Kagyan, I believe. Mm. And the question was asked, who would you rather play against in another season, Tony or Spencer?
Yeah.
And he said, I would rather play against whoever wins.
Yeah. And it's true. It's because like, if you've been on the bottom, or if you've been on the outside of a vote, then you know what to look for. And like, you know, I just feel like you ultimately end up a better player. Whereas like Tony, like everything.
And I never had that really up until I got voted out in the All-Stars.
Right. And you have to be lucky enough that like when you lose that vote, that it's not you, it's an ally. Yeah.
Like Natalie Anderson back in San Juan del Sur.
Exactly. And like at that point, like that's when things turned on for her. And that's when she knew what she had to look for and like how she really had to play.
What was your moment like that? Was it when
Max was voted out?
Max, yeah.
And I realized all the data like had been there. Like Carolyn spent all of her time with Joaquin and Tyler at White Collar Camp. And I remember it really bothered me, but I just like in my head, I was like, but she's in my alliance. Like we're fine. Mm-hmm. And like, but you know, the signals were all there and I just ignored them for...
It's that usual suspects moment where it's like, oh.
Right, exactly. And like from that point onward, I did end up... I mean, I was never in power again, but like I, you know, did have a good read on the game. I think I was the person who outed the Axis of Evil Alliance, like, because at the end of the day, like, if your eyes are open, most people are hanging out with the people that they're voting with. Most people are talking to the people that they're voting with. Like, signals are there. It's really tough to blindside people, particularly when you have cameras and sound booms following people. You can't go off in private. Like, all you have to do is look in the jungle and see like a giant sound boom sticking out of the trees. And you're like, oh, who's over there? Oh, it's Aubrey and Ty talking. That's weird.
Yeah.
You know,
In everything that you're talking about. Okay. This leads me into a question. Let's start jumping into these questions.
Okay.
Ben Dubs wants to know, third time's the charm. Are you at all interested in another Survivor stint now that we talked about like this, digesting it, getting over it the second time? Is it like, okay, I am healed or I am finally ready to do it again?
I wouldn't go back so soon.
Yeah.
Like, you know, all these season 34 rumors are floating around and
what rumors, Shireen?
And I just, you know, praise the Lord that I was not called because like, I would not want to go back so soon. And I also don't have it in me to say no. It's that itch, the hunger, and like, I can't say no to an adventure. But you know, years down the line, if I get a call, yeah, absolutely. I would love to play again. I'm still a fan of I mean, what this season has really done for me and partly probably why I love this season so much is because it's the first time, you know, really since Kagyan that I've been able to watch, you know, as a fan again, having not just come back from filming, having not being on the season itself. I'm just loving being a fan. I don't know where I was going with that, but I'm loving being a fan again. I'm a real big fan of the show.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a reminder to me that I do love this game.
I feel like you have another run in you. Another stint in you.
Don't hang
up the buff yet.
We'll see.
Yeah.
I don't know that they would want me back, quite frankly.
Yeah.
But, you know,
why do you say that?
Well, I guess for a couple of reasons, I think that there was so much backlash to Worlds Apart, and I was at the center of a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
That I, you know, I wonder if the producers would worry about bringing such a lightning rod back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
you are a lightning rod.
I'm a bit of a lightning rod.
Yes.
Yeah.
You have people that fiercely love you, and other people who, for whatever reason, really also dislike you.
Yeah. Hate me.
Yeah.
Disdain.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, and it's like, it's weird. It's like, even as I've pulled away from certain cast members, like, there's this like obsessiveness with just holding on and like either like praising me or shitting on me. And I can't get away. I can't get away.
Do you like that or you don't like it at all?
I don't like it. I didn't go on the show to be famous. I went on the show purely because I'm a fan. And so I don't always, you know, I don't always like the attention. I like the friends that I've made from the show. I like the fans that I relate to and that converse with me, like at a fan level.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if that makes sense. I don't like being a lightning rod. I like to be left alone. I like just living my life and making friends.
Yeah. I don't like being a lightning rod.
Yeah. And it's not pleasant. Yeah. That said, you know, a lightning rod can be good TV.
Yes. Makes good TV. All right. Let's take a question from John Scholl, who writes in, what sort of voodoo does Shireen have to appear on the podcast after an episode with a numbers loophole?
Numbers loophole.
And the only other 4-2-2 post-merge vote, aside from the one against her in season 30. How about that? Were you aware of this?
No.
So this is good. So you got voted out, I guess, so 1 year ago.
I remember that it was a 4-2-2.
The final eight.
Yeah.
Okay. And yeah, a 4-2-2 split, just like this vote.
Yeah.
Amazing.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
It's a kismet. Also, I was eighth place, and then this is an eighth place vote.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the difference actually is that they're, because of the medevac, or because of one of the medevacs, they're essentially one vote behind. So this vote in this season lines up with our ninth place vote. Like, we had the auction was at our ninth place vote. This reward challenge was similar to the auction. And I believe the Scott went out on day 27. I think Jen went out on day 26 or 27. That said, he's the eighth place person. I was the eighth place person. 4-2-2, 4-2-2. whatever else the other thing was.
So this was, I believe, day 27. So what day? What day were you?
Day 29.
Day 29. Okay. Yeah. So do you think that that speaks more to the fact that you, do you think that we are headed to a final two in this season?
I mean, it sure looks that way numbers wise, but I just feel like it has to be a final three. I feel like Jeff Probst has publicly made a comment that they wouldn't do a final two again.
Why? I feel like they got so much drama out of the Wu Cass Tony thing where Wu didn't take Cass to the end and took Tony. I feel like that was such a big thing.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I missed the final two. I actually really liked the final two from the days of yore, you know, RIP for your game.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. I do think it's good TV, but I seem to remember Jeff Probst making a comment that he didn't like final twos, that he preferred final threes.
Yeah.
So I just feel like, even though the days don't totally add up, I feel like we're headed for a final three.
You know, we had this really intriguing reward challenge last night where you could either play for advantage, play for food, or play for love. Now, similarly in Worlds Apart, you know, there was this whole big kerfuffle which happened around the auction where you were somebody that you were bidding big on food. You knew all the rules.
Yeah.
You knew everything that was going on.
Yeah.
And you consciously made that decision of, I'm not playing for advantage here. I'm here playing for food.
Yeah.
If you were in this season, would you have made that same decision?
No.
Okay.
No. Yeah. And I saw, I think Steven tweeted about this, like, don't go for the advantage, go for the food. And I completely disagree with him. I completely regret having been that person who went for the food. I completely regret it. I had reasons for doing it, logical reasons for doing it. Mm-hmm. I still think I was in the wrong. And I think that, like, I think the real lesson to learn here from the past couple of seasons is, I think you go for the advantage, you always go for the advantage, and you just play it immediately. You don't sit on it and like let it loom as and make you a threat.
Mm-hmm. I've said the Worlds Apart auction, I think, is the most important auction in the history of the show.
Really?
Yeah. Because mostly nothing happens at the auction. Mostly it's just fluff. Yeah. I think that the auction is the inciting incident of Worlds Apart.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I think like everything was centered around that auction.
I mean, that the stuff between you and Will is a fallout of the auction. The stuff between, you know, Mike ending up completely being, ostracized from everybody sort of like sets off the whole chain of events, which leads to Mike going on the immunity run and winning the season.
Mm-hmm.
I think it all starts, mostly nothing happens at the auction.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. I mean, I agree with with that. I have nothing insightful to say.
Dan gets his advantage at the auction. Which I mean, you have a bunch of major things which come out of the auction in that episode.
Yeah. No. And I really liked this twist on the auction, this like reward challenge version of it.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see the next time Survivor does an auction. Now, we've done two seasons. I don't know if we have one coming up.
Yeah. I can't imagine that they'll ever do it again, because I also feel like at Worlds Apart, like it
broke the auction.
Broke it.
Yeah. you're saying like, hey, everybody, nobody bid on the letters. We'll all get our letters here for $20 if you just don't do anything. And Jeff's like kind of shrugging. He's like, yeah, I guess that's the rule.
Yeah.
And then this other great moment comes out of that where Mike doesn't put his money up on the counter.
Yep.
And
then also Will wanting his letters. The only reason why Will thought that he had a right to his letters was because everybody got their letters, and the only reason why everybody got their letters is because I broke the auction in that way.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel like it was my gift to bestow on to bestow upon him in the first place, and therefore my right to take away
the meta auction.
Meta auction.
The postmodern auction. We'll have to see what Survivor can do with an auction again after. Okay, but just to go back to this, you said you would not go for the food, you would go for the advantage here.
Totally would go for the advantage. And
why?
Because it's an advantage in the game, because you're playing a game, you don't need the food. You don't need the letters. You're very close to the end. Like what every single person there needs is an advantage, because they're playing a game. And even again, like even if you think that you're safe, you're not, you know, even if you think you're in trouble, then you definitely need the advantage. And like the reason why I didn't go for it in my season was because I was specifically told not to. I was told that it would paint a target on my back, and that people who are now willing to work with me would not work with me if I did go for it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think that that was just, you know, like them throwing their weight around. And I think ultimately what ended up being, there was already such a big change that happened in the game with Mike at that point anyway, that like if I had actually won that advantage, then Mike, Jen, and I like would have won the next vote. because they would have split the vote and our four votes would have taken, you know, the cake. And so that's why it's such a big regret for me that I didn't even try to go for the advantage, because it actually would have changed my game. It would have kept me in the game. Yeah, I just think that you always go for the advantage and you just play it immediately.
Yeah. Okay. Very interesting. Amanda Rabinowitz, who I got to meet at the Live Know-It-Alls last week. She wants to know, what do you think about the formats that divide tribes by their attributes, brains, beauty, brawn, or class? Does being defined by these groupings influence the way that players play the game in the individual phase? Or do you think that it's just the same as if you were in a tribe like Philippines? Hey, here's six random people on Mat Singh.
No, I do think it influences the game because, like, it sets people up to be certain stereotypes. I prefer the brains, brawn, beauty format to the class breakdown, I think, for sort of obvious reasons. But the other thing, like, when on day one of Worlds Apart, when Jeff Probst announced us all on the mats and talked about the theme of the season, he painted the white collar people in a sort of negative light. And I believe both Dalton Ross and Gordon Holmes talked about this in their press. So, like, you can see this is not fan fiction. Like, they talked about how Jeff was really making out the white collars to appear as villains and as the man, and bonded the blue collars and the
no collar
and the no collar against us in that way. And that, and it also ultimately, like, helped the blue collars win our first immunity challenge, and that, like, the no collars allowed them to cheat off of their puzzle because they wanted the white collars to go to tribal first.
Mm-hmm.
And it just kind of set up like this weird, like, ugly dynamic. Like, I remember, like, Joaquin, I think, had some confessional of, like, oh, we hire the blue collars to make our fires for us. Like,
mm-hmm.
But it's like, I feel like it brought out, you know, an ugliness in certain people. I think it also caused other people to really embrace this, like, you know, prescriptive side to themselves.
Mm-hmm.
At least with Brains, Brawn, Beauty, like, I mean, it's funny because even in Brains, Brawn, Beauty, like, brains are valued, brawn is valued. Like, what are the beauty supposed to do? Like, come together and be like, we're all so beautiful.
Yeah. I think that Morgan was probably the only beauty in either season that was really, like, embracing that aspect.
Right. Like, I feel like there could be, I mean, and I get it as a theme, but, like, I feel like there could be something better. Actually, like, I feel like a riff on that theme that I would like to see would be social game versus strategy versus challenge beasts.
Yeah, the outwit, outplay, outlast.
Yeah.
Sort of idea.
Yeah.
And I think it's a good idea. And, you know, if instead of just, like, I mean, you could just, like, do it like, hey, we're always going to do brains versus brawn versus beauty, which, right, I think is fine. You don't always have to, like, I feel like blue collar, white collar, no collar was sort of like coming up with another variation of it.
Yeah.
At least this time around, they just said, like, hey, we're not going to just, like, come up with three synonyms. Like, let's just do brains versus brawn versus beauty again.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I would not mind a brains versus brawn versus beauty 3.
I wouldn't either. And I think even an all-star version of that would be interesting.
I agree. Gordon Holmes and I casted it a couple of years ago, I think, when they did the first season.
Oh, did you an all-star BBB?
We've done sort of like coming up with all-star. I think we also did all-star white collar, blue collar, no collar podcast also at one point when your season was coming out. Yeah, so we'll see what we can come up with in January.
Yeah.
Ryan Hilliard wants to know, Shireen, I turned 25 in 6 months. How can I make $1 million by then?
Do you have a computer science degree?
Okay, all right. So
go into computer science.
How quickly can you get that? Yeah. Similarly, here's another question from Amanda. Wants to know, in Scott's exit interview with Josh Wiggler, he says, when I went into the game of Survivor, I thought, no way is anyone going to award a millionaire $1 million. So I'm instantly playing for second place.
False.
Does this make us view his gameplay any differently? Do you think he ever had a path to the million, even without taking on the villain role? Okay, so let's take this in two parts.
Yeah.
So you very quickly said false about that.
Yeah, I feel like it's like just such fan fiction that people are going to use attributes of your life, like solely for being those attributes, like against you in a final tribal. Because if you actually look historically at the people who've won, like, hello, Earl beat Dreams. Earl, a marketing director,
yes,
beat a homeless guy.
Yes.
Okay. Like in a shutout, like ultimately what people are voting for on the jury has nothing to do with, I mean, it does have to do with your real life and attributes about your real life,
yeah,
to the extent that they become a part of your personality.
Yes. One of our listeners, Sean Falconer, who really charts a lot of this stuff for us, and he's also from the San Francisco area, that he, we've talked about this recently on the podcast, of what was the person who won the game with the highest net worth.
I saw that. And actually there, from my like knowledge of what some of those people make, I think that he was actually like lowballing on a few people.
Lowballing. Okay. So yeah, actually, so there are some people that may have been worth more.
Absolutely.
He was going by the approximate salary of the position, yeah, that each person held.
Yep.
And he said that he had Yule as the person who beat Ozzy, who was kind of also,
And Ozzy was up like, clearly not as well off as Yule. Yeah.
Not as well off as, better off than Dreams, but probably not by much at that point in time.
Rightly. Right. And, but also like, I mean, and Yule's earning potential also, like, right. He was a clerk for a Supreme Court justice. And then he, was a, business owner, and that, like, now he, he's like the head of privacy at Facebook.
Yeah.
Like he's, Yule's a millionaire. I think there are many millionaires who've played this game.
Yes.
And like, Cochran's earning potential versus Don, like, who has a million kids. And like, it just doesn't come down to these arbitrary facets of your life. It comes down to the way that people think of you when they're on the jury.
Yeah.
And I actually have a theory. I have my stronger theory on this is I think people vote for who they're most okay with admitting bested them. So I'm okay with admitting so-and-so beat me. Mm-hmm. I think that's what most people are voting on.
I think there's something to that. So the second part of that was that, do you look at Scott's game as saying that Scott knew he never had a chance to win, so he was playing a second place game the whole way?
No, I think that he was playing to win. I don't think he has it in him to not play to win. I think that he thinks so highly of himself that he probably was like thought that it was just going to be handed to him. I thought that he was like, living out his own winner's edit. He probably, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Okay, let's take a question from Bob Marassa, who says, do you agree that Aubrey is one of the best players in terms of being self-aware while at the same time being totally aware of what's going on in the game? She seems to always have a finger on the pulse of the other players.
Hello, Bob Marassa. I 100% agree with you.
Yes.
Ding.
Yes. I'll also give you a
ding, ka-ching, ka-ching.
Okay. Do you want to expand on that at all?
No, I think that like Aubrey is a bright girl. I think she's really in touch with, people and their emotions and where they're at and their personalities. And I think she's also really, hyper self-aware, and she knows like what she's putting out there. And I think, she's just playing the ultimate social game with a good grasp on strategy as well.
Jay Blair Sanders wants to know, does the elimination of Scott throw a kink in the intentional Matt Singh / Luzon theory, which we've talked about for many years on the podcast, of the way the cheat to beat these three tribe seasons is do really bad at first, become the Malcolm and Denise. When it comes to the merge, people will look at you as a linchpin, as somebody who can help us beat the other two superpowers. And then there you go. Here's Scott, who goes out in mid-season. What do you think about this?
No, I don't think it impacts the intentional Matt Singh because, Jason's still in the game and Sydney's still, on track for final tribal council.
Mm-hmm.
So intentional Matt Singh still seems to hold. I mean, we'll know more at the end of the season, but...
We'll know more at the end of the season. And again, I don't even know if the Brains versus Brawn versus Beauty first time around really that held to be true, because it wasn't so much like I felt like it wasn't like Beauty and Brawn were like, hey, let's go after each other. Like,
right.
LJ and Jeffro were working with Tony. Yeah. And so it wasn't as clear as that was either. So I think that we need to see another season where, and again, same thing in Worlds Apart, it did not work out like that.
Well, I think that like what we saw from the seasons with the Matt Singh situation is you saw the most dominant tribe and you saw the least dominant tribe come together and make it all the way to the end. Like, right, you had the Tendang and the Matt Singh come together in the end. Mm-hmm. You had what's the other season that we Brains Beyond Beauty. You ultimately did have Braun and Brains, the last one standing in the end. And even in Worlds Apart, like the Braun were the dominant tribe in the beginning, and they did ultimately send Lindsay home before a swap, but they were still the dominant tribe up till then, and they did dominate the post merge game. And that's what's falling apart here, because Beauty were the dominant tribe in this season, and Beauty at this point has been decimated, right? Like, they've all been split apart. Like, who knows what's going on there?
Okay. All right, how about a question from your buddy Umberto, who says, wait for it. What is Julia's best plan moving forward? By telling Ty to play his idol in Tribal, she probably lost all her allies. Is she stuck with Jason?
Wait for it.
Yes, we're waiting.
No, actually, it's funny. Yeah, Julia. I don't know how Julia gets herself out of this one. She's she's enemy number one of the, you know, two head BICs. And
Aubrey does not love Julia.
No. Yeah. And neither does Sydney. Mm-hmm. Which is like, get her traitor ass.
Traitor ass, yeah.
And then she just solidified it with her play it. Because she, it seemed like it was a clear signal that, like, hey, like, Scott and Jason, you can actually just keep your idol. Like, you only need to lose Ty's idol if he plays it now, kind of thing. I can't imagine that, like, Aubrey and Sydney didn't see that and pick up on that and then just, you know, nail in the coffin for Julia.
Mm-hmm.
I think Julia just assumed she was going to get her way and that it was like, you know, the votes were already cast and that she was now in the clear to publicly side with the guys. And it just wasn't the case. She lost the vote. She's got a lot of work to do. And I don't know that there's much she can do at this point.
Okay, Natalie Anna says, I think Shireen is such an inspiration and an amazing role model for younger girls in that she was able to rise up against bullying in her first season, call out those who were responsible, and stay true to herself the whole time. I'd like to know how she feels knowing that so many women look up to her and the way she handled the situation. And I would also like to say thank you for showing everyone what strong women who are true to themselves are capable of. Much respect and appreciation.
That's super sweet.
How about that?
I really appreciate that.
Yes. So I don't know if there was so much of a question there, but also just a thank you.
I would just recommend that like all girls should see the musical Wicked.
Wicked.
Yeah.
Yes.
It addresses some of the bullying things. It does it in like a fun, quirky way. The take home theme is that like anybody can defy gravity and do what they want and overcome and it, you know, promotes strong women.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that, you know, I always wanted to get to talk to you about. So you, in Worlds Apart, you talked about how, you know, you grew up in Orange County and then, you know, you had a hard time at school. And then you, at the end of the season, yada, yada, yada. You know, I made my first million when I was 25 years old. But that I feel like we yada, yada'd the best part. And so where did you go from your, you know, you had a tough upbringing in high school. And so then you go on to go work at Google, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So could you talk a little bit about the yada yada part?
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess I'll say, and I'll try to be brief, but like, I grew up in a home with domestic violence, mm-hmm. as came out on the show, and it was really bad. And then on top of that, I, you know, went to a predominantly white, elementary school, middle school, high school, mm-hmm. where and there was a big Hispanic community. I was often and where the whites were. Aggressive, like racist towards the Hispanics. And I was often mistaken as being Hispanic, even when people knew I was Middle Eastern, I was also attacked for that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're like in middle school, like people threw rocks at me.
Yeah.
And then while yelling, you know, racist pejoratives, like mm-hmm. Middle Eastern pejoratives. And so I had a terrible home life. I had a terrible school life. And the way that I had the only thing that I had control over was doing well in school. And I always thought, my only way out of any of this was, briefly, and for people who ask about it, like, there were social workers and police involved, and they always dismissed what was going on in my home and never helped. Mm-hmm. And I tried reporting it, and I was rebuffed in like a really unfortunate way, which is why I think it's so important now for me. Like I donate a lot of my time and money to domestic violence nonprofits. But anyway, so I'll move on. And so the one thing that I had control over was doing well in school. And I knew that if I had, you know, if I like, you know, got straight A's and applied for every scholarship under the sun, that somehow, some way I'd be able to go to, you know, to a good school. And if I went to a good school and did well. And so, and it was just this like, you know, it was this sort of American dream mentality of like, I can go anywhere. I can do anything. I just need to get the fuck out of here. And I like literally chose the college that I went to because it was the furthest away from home. And mm-hmm. I just needed to be far, far away from Orange County. And so I did all those things. I got like a ton of scholarships. I also, you're supposed to report all of your scholarships to these universities, and then they take them away from your financial aid package.
Okay.
So I actually didn't report any of them. Pro tip to all you people applying for scholarships in high school. Mm-hmm. I didn't report them so that I could actually like pay what little balance I had that I did have to pay out of pocket. Mm. Ultimately I got like I went to Brown University. I ended up getting a full financial aid package based on need because, yeah. When I left the home, like my mother did leave my father. And so, and she was, you know, very poor. And mm-hmm. so we had no money. And so I got a full financial aid package. I was able to go to Brown University. I studied computer science and creative writing, and that led to my career in tech. And again, like I had a rough, and this is the other thing, I had a really rough freshman year of college because it was the first time in my life I was free. It was mm-hmm. the first time in my life I was allowed to be a human, a person.
Right. So what were you like really like social life? Like where you sort of like, cause I know a lot of people that like went away to college and it's like, okay, I'm away from my parents for the first time.
Yeah.
Let me party and stuff like that. Is it like, it was just rough emotionally or?
It, like all of the above, like any like bad thing you can think about. Like how, so like the other thing that I didn't even talk about here that I'll again, just like touch upon is that growing up and like in the way that I did with the abuse that I did and everything, I also, I turned to food. I was really overweight and I was an athlete. I played field hockey all through high school, but like mm-hmm. I became really overweight. And so come freshman year of college, I became even more overweight. I gained so much weight. I was like I was an obese person. And
so not like freshman 15.
No, it was like a freshman, like 30, 40 kind of situation. Okay. It was like, I was over, I mean, I'm, you know, I mean, this is, I shouldn't be embarrassed about that. I'm only 5'2" and I was over 200 pounds.
Okay.
And so I was a big girl. And then on top of that, like I was drinking a lot and partying cause I never got to do that.
Yeah.
And, I was just skipping classes. I'd sleep in and skip all my classes. And then also I wasn't prepared for the winters at all. Cause I grew up in Southern California and I didn't have the right clothing. I also couldn't afford the right clothing to wear in those winters. And so I also just didn't leave the dorm through all the winter months. I didn't go to any of my classes. And like I did really poorly in all my classes my whole freshman year.
Yeah.
And then my sophomore year, I just kind of like snapped.
You didn't fail out or anything like that.
No, I didn't fail out, but like I was certainly headed in that direction. Mm-hmm. And I at some point towards the end of my freshman year, I just woke up and I realized I realized that there were parts of my upbringing.
You're going to be going back to Orange County in a minute.
Yeah.
Right.
No, it was a genuine fear. I was like, what am I doing?
Wake up call.
What can you do with your life if this is the end? And I realized like there were aspects of myself that I did love because I just so badly wanted to get away from all of it that I forgot that I did value something in myself. And what I valued in myself was, you know, my intelligence and my hard work and doing well in school.
Mm-hmm.
And so I picked that back up and then that's also when I picked up I started out as an engineering major. I was going to go into mechanical engineering. I switched over to computer science my sophomore year. And then a part of it was because I had never had exposure to computer science as a child, the way that most other people in mm-hmm. my class had. And so I had to work extra hard to really learn it and to do well at it. And
what was it about computers that appealed to you?
It's incredibly logical.
Yes.
Like the algorithms, the problem solving in particular. So it wasn't like code coding is interesting because like you get, there's this feeling of gratification you get when your code like runs correct and does the thing that you wanted it to do.
What year is this?
This is my sophomore. Well, I took a computer science,
chronologically.
Oh, so the end of my second semester freshman year, I took my first intro to computer science class, but I switched into the CS major my sophomore year. So this is now like, you know, first semester of my sophomore year. And I'm like, you know, busting my butt to really learn this brand new field. And I'm learning about the different aspects of the field. And then by the end of my sophomore year, I learned even like the area of computer science that I really love, which was data structures and algorithms, which is really like the, again, just the more like problem solving logical side of things. And then I was also studying creative writing. And so I was getting my like creative outlet, you know, there, and I was getting my logical, you know, game bot side or whatever you want to call it, like there at the computer science.
And do you feel like that's kind of like the way that you approach Survivor from sort of like, do you look at it the same way, like the computer code? Or is that too simple of an analogy?
It's too simple of an analogy. Yeah. I mean, I think that like, again, especially having now played the game, like you really realize like there's, you know, such a human component and it comes down to like the personalities that you're playing with certainly I think the strategy aspect of the game is absolutely, you know, like there's a relation to computer science there.
Yes.
But in terms of like what actually gets you through the game, it's more of the creative writing.
Yeah, not so much the
numbers loophole.
The numbers loophole.
Right.
And when do you get really into Survivor?
Oh, and I got really into Survivor, you know.
Are you still in high school?
Yeah, I was in high school, I think, when the first season came out. And I didn't watch the first episode, and you know, there was such a big craze after that first episode came out. All my friends at school said that like it, you know, like they could really see me being into the show. And so I watched.
Did they make fun of you for that, or that everybody's into it?
No, like everybody's into it. And then I went back and watched that first episode because, you know, my friend had it recorded on his VCR, VHS tape.
Yes.
And then I always watched it, after, like from episode two onwards, like I watched it live every season. And I loved that I loved that it was a total escape from life, that you just got to get away from everybody and everything and go into the jungle and start fresh and like live with nothing.
And so one day that Kelly Wigglesworth and I will live on the same beach.
Yeah. I wish it were Colleen or Greg, Greg Buist.
Yes.
No, and Greg Buist was like the Ivy League graduate. Then one day I went to the same school as him.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, even, and Rafe was in my class at Brown.
Really?
Yeah. We have like a ton of mutual friends. I met him a couple times, I remember him from Brown. And then when he made it on the show, I was like, fuck, man, like how did he get it? He's in my class. And then I thought, they're never going to put me on the show because I was in the same class as Rafe. Like, I don't know why I thought that.
Right.
But yeah, no, I was obsessed like all the way through. And then I stopped. I stopped watching after Thailand. Loathed Thailand.
Yes.
And so I missed 6 and 7. I missed Amazon and Pearl Islands.
Nothing good happened.
But then when All Stars was going to come out, when season 8 came out, I was just like, what have I, like, I was like, you know, I loved that show. It was a big part of my childhood and my high school days, whatever. Like I need something like that to be really passionate about again.
Yeah.
And so I downloaded season 6 and 7 and binge watched them.
Like Napster.
Yeah. On
LimeWire.
Like, on LimeWire, actually, because at that point Napster was like on the way out and LimeWire was on the way in. No, I absolutely downloaded all these episodes. And then I couldn't believe it because Amazon and Pearl Islands are both two of my favorite seasons.
Yeah.
And I was just like, man, like what? Like Thailand needs to be, like they shouldn't have even aired it.
Right.
And then I was back in full swing for All Stars and then also that's around the time when I turned 21 is when I was allowed to start applying for the show. And so like it was in college. And so I remember like one of the first times I applied, a friend of mine said, you know, like, Shireen, you're not good looking enough to get on that show.
Oh.
And he didn't mean it in a mean way, but he was just like, he's like, no, I just mean like the women that they cast for that show, they're all models and you're not a model.
Yeah. You're no lunch lady Denise.
No, I mean, beautiful, beautiful. And I remember like he said that to me, and I was like. You know, again, if anything,
in the era when you're on the show, I feel like that there's less that there were more everyday people in the early days than
I agree with that. Yeah. And whereas when I was on the show, like everybody was like a slamming bikini body babe, except for like me and maybe one other.
Yeah.
I remember my friend saying that, and then like when I finally got on the show, he also lives in San Francisco now, and I invited him to my viewing party, and like in my intro speech about getting on the show, like I called him out. He laughed at, like, we all laughed about it, but yeah. 10 years of applying, finally got on.
Okay. Let me see. Edward Morris wants to know, please talk about your WrestleMania experience. What were your highlights? Why were you at WrestleMania? You don't care about wrestling, right?
I
had heard that it was like a bucket list thing for you
To
go to WrestleMania.
Yeah, I just feel like I have so many friends who...
But what was it about WrestleMania? Like,
because like it rolls around every year, and then suddenly like everybody's talking about it, and I'm just like...
But it's like, I'm not really into music. I'm not going to be at Coachella for some reason.
Well, you and I are different people. I went to Coachella a couple times.
How was it?
And it's both miserable and a lot of fun. Like it's 2 hours just to get in and just to get out. And like when you're there, like you basically like it can swing from 110 degrees Fahrenheit down to like almost freezing in a single day. And so like you pack like
what's the point? Just to tell people that you went to Coachella?
No, to see what the hype is about and to see if like I can appreciate any of it.
Should I go?
To Coachella?
I'd rather go to WrestleMania by a lot.
I don't think that you would enjoy Coachella.
No.
I do think you could enjoy WrestleMania. Oh. I didn't think I would enjoy WrestleMania. I thought I was going to go, that I still wasn't going to get it. Because I know, you know, it's all choreographed. It's all...
How dare you?
And I was just like, I don't understand how, you know, if it's all rigged, people can like it. And I think that's the difference, is I realized it's not rigged. It's choreographed. And these are like, you know, amazing acrobatic moves. I like the more acrobatic style of wrestling. I tried to prep myself a little bit before going to WrestleMania. I watched some of the WWE pay-per-view events leading up to it. Mm-hmm. And in particular, there's this one group, they're called Factions, in WWE called New Day.
New Day.
New Day, like the Wiz song, just like our Survivor player, Sean Rector, sang Once Upon a Time in Survivor Marquesas. And so New Day are just these three fun-loving dudes who wear, you know, sparkly leotards and light up unicorn horns. And they just like their whole motto is about like bringing joy, like being happy, embracing happiness. They have this cereal called Bootios.
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 Okay.
And the idea is that like you don't want to be booty.
You don't want to be booty.
You don't want to be booty. Booty is being an ass, right? You don't want to be a butt.
Don't check me, booty.
Don't check me, boo.
And when you eat the Bootios, which are gluteus free, then you keep booty away. And so you might say that Scott was booty, and that's why he got booted. He didn't eat his Bootios.
I'll take your word for it.
But I think that
I buy this in? Is it in the store?
No, I think you have to buy it from, you could buy it online.
You can buy it from the WWE?
Yeah.
Okay.
I highly recommend it.
All right. Mm-hmm. So you would recommend, so you go to WrestleMania again.
Yeah.
You recommend I do not go to Coachella.
Yeah. Oh, and here's another difference between WrestleMania and Coachella for all you female listeners out there.
Yes.
When you go to Coachella, the bathrooms are all porta potties. There's a giant line and women take forever in there.
Yes.
And they're disgusting in all the ways that you imagine them being disgusting.
Yes.
But worse. Imagine much, much worse. And, you know, no toilet paper. Everything is gross. When you go to WrestleMania and you go into the ladies' restroom, there are 50 stalls. All open. You get to choose which stall you want to go into.
Right.
Like it's a palace. It's a mansion of bathroom stalls.
Who do you go to WrestleMania with? You have a friend who's really into wrestling that's like explaining things, or you're on your own there?
So I do have a couple friends who are super into wrestling, who taught me a lot about it going into it, including one Gordon Holmes.
Gordon Holmes.
May have heard of him.
Did he go to WrestleMania also?
No, he didn't, but I tried convincing him to go. I was like, if you go, we can buy seats together, be friends. And he did not go.
You've been doing the power rankings with him this season. How's that going? Who's winning?
I believe I'm winning.
Yes.
Barely. He and I are actually like usually on the same wavelength. We usually only disagree on like on one or two people. Actually the power rankings for me have helped me be able to enjoy the show again as a fan because like I'm no longer in it. I'm able to joke about the players and just, you know, be snarky and have fun.
That I read your power rankings for the, I think it was like the first episode. They were like surprisingly racy.
Oh yeah. The first couple of weeks I was pretty racy. I haven't been the last couple of weeks. I've been a lot better about that. Actually, I got warned that I need to be more family friendly.
Who's what? Gordon is saying like, hey, like,
No comment.
Okay. Or like the social media is saying like,
no,
hey,
like the man,
the man, okay.
The man swooped in,
white collar tribe.
The white collar tribe swooped in and sent me an email and was like, yo, it's a family show.
CBS 8 PM. Right.
Yeah. Like, come on. Shereen.
I mean, that's what I try to do with this show.
No, it's true.
We try. That's the goal that we strive for. We don't always hit it.
Yeah.
You know, there's that definitely things slip through.
So does that mean you did not read the rest of my rankings? You don't read them week to week?
I don't read them ever. Like, because I always feel like that there's
a little disappointed, Rob.
There's a little chance that I feel like that any season I never read them because I try not to have too much inception into what goes on here because I don't want to be parroting back what other people are saying on the podcast. Like like these dumb thoughts that I have, like I try to keep them for the most part solely my own.
Yeah.
But at the end of the season, I would love to like go back and like and read them.
That's actually, it's funny that you say that. That's how I feel about exit interviews. I don't like during the season to read exit interviews because I don't want to read into them at all. And so what I do is I collect all the links.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end of this season, I read a couple people's exit interviews this season, but most people's I've tried to avoid and I've just collected the links and I'm going to go back at the end of the season and read them all.
Yeah.
Like for example, one person's exit interviews that I did read made a comment about like, oh, like you think Ty's all nice and whatever, but he's super cutthroat. And I'm just like, well, there's only one thing that can mean. Like,
come on.
And like, and then so when it happened last night, when Ty like, you know, did cut Scott's throat, I was just like, oh man.
Yeah.
It was a spoiler.
It's tough. It's tough. You know, it's definitely a occupational hazard.
It's an occupational hazard. You got to avoid everything. You got to hide your kids, hide your wife.
Yes. Yes.
And just take it in. I mean, honestly, like again, like going back to being a fan is really divorcing myself in every possible way from the Survivor community.
Yeah. Well, don't divorce yourself from me.
No, I won't. We're still married.
Yes, I already live in fear of divorce anyway. I don't need to add this. Kevin Donnelly. But did Nicole seem? Did she seem like she's happy downstairs?
Yeah, Nicole. She was excited to drink coffee.
Yes.
Which I think is a little telling. But she seemed to be having fun with Anthony, so I think she's a happy woman.
Okay, good. Kevin Donnelly wants to know, what person from either of your seasons do you wish you could have aligned with through the missed connection section of Craigslist? Do you think that that was a weird reference for Aubrey to make?
No. What I love, she's constantly making analogies and metaphors, and I think that's just the way that she communicates, which I think...
The Oregon Trail.
Right.
Missed connections on Craigslist.
Yep, and sometimes they're hit for me, and sometimes they're... Like, the sugary cake didn't hit for me. Mm-hmm. I got where she was going with that, but the missed connections thing was perfect for me, because it's true, like, she and Ty...
Are people still using it seems like a very dated thing.
Missed connections?
Yeah, like, oh, I met somebody
Bet you go on there and like they probably still has like a million users. I bet you, just not people that you and I commune with on a daily basis.
Like, what are the chances that I met this person at Coachella. They were awesome. I didn't get their contact information, even though there's a million and a half ways to do that in 2016.
Right. I think most people probably try to like find them on like Facebook or some other way.
Right.
But I think if depending on how obsessed you were with that person or how, you know, in love you were with that person, maybe you also think like, just in case I'm going to go to Craigslist.
Yeah.
Just in case.
I'd be surprised if that ever worked. If it ever happened.
I
think it's people just trying to make new connections.
There's very little that surprises me these days.
Yeah.
Well, I was on Survivor. There's very little that shocks me
anymore.
Twice
you were on.
Oh, thanks.
Twice.
It wasn't really twice.
Look, we can say it. We're allowed to say it. Is there anybody from either of the two seasons that you feel like, oh, really, I wish I would have worked with that person?
But I don't know if this counts. It's not the same as the Aubrey and Tymus connection.
Yes.
But Lindsay from my first season.
Really?
Goddess queen. I love her. I mean, she's like, probably like my favorite person from Worlds Apart at this point.
Yes.
She's grounded.
Mm-hmm.
She gets it. She's a really like kind person and she doesn't put up with shit.
Right?
She did have a baby. She's a successful, strong woman. She mm-hmm. is like the head of her household.
HOH.
I don't actually watch Big Brother, but I get the reference.
Yeah.
No, I
don't know how much you like it.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't. But the thing with Lindsay is I've only actually even met her a couple of times, and I actually think that that also speaks volumes.
That's
to her.
A key to liking people.
Yeah.
No, the more times you meet them, the more opportunities there are for something right. to go wrong.
and I think it speaks to like she's busy all the time because she's got a family and she's got like a successful
not
job
a lot of idle
and like
time.
Right, not a lot of idle time and so her time is valuable to her and every time we've connected, we just had this like explosive energy, like positive explosive energy. And I just really, really, really wish that I got to play with her.
Mm-hmm.
I think you switch positions between her and Sierra. If Lindsay's the one who makes the merge, I think you have a completely different outcome in the game.
Okay. Miles Nye wants to know, Aubrey's two runner-up finishes in the challenges from this episode remind me of the perpetual number two finisher from The Genius, Jin Ho.
Mm.
What other similarities between Aubrey and Jin Ho do you see? And for listeners who don't watch The Genius, can you make a case in 140 characters or less? Hashtag fighting. And let's not go too far in the Genius path that our voicemail guest, Scott Green, hosts a Genius podcast. We might have #Genius Overload.
Genius Overload. No, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say like Aubrey and Jin Ho, not a lot in common. Aubrey and Sangmin.
Mm-hmm.
A lot in common.
Yes.
Yeah. Sangmin was quirky and neurotic and brilliant and just like always thinking outside the box and connecting with people. That was his big thing, is that he read people really well and connected with people really well. And that's totally Aubrey. And, you know, he ultimately was a winner of the game. Spoiler alert. And hopefully it doesn't take her, you know, as many times as it took him. I mean, it only took him twice, but.
Okay. All right, and then let's just get, check off all of our boxes here. Noah wants to know, can you sort the remaining players into Hogwarts houses?
Oh, yeah.
And I said, I butchered Noah's name wrong. Sorry, Noah. She's very nice.
Wait, what's Noah's last name?
Naman.
Naman.
Yes.
Oh, that Noah. Noah, my friend who's from Waltham, Mass.
Yes, 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 yes. She was at the Live Note Alls too.
I know, I missed her. I was in New York, but I couldn't come.
Again, this is like your thing where you're
thing.
Just like,
I'm in town, but I missed.
Just outside of where we're going to do the thing and then just not going to be there.
Uh huh. But yeah. I hung out with people. I went to the Puffs, Hufflepuff play.
Oh.
With a bunch of rap people.
Yeah.
I saw Amy and Umberto.
Well, now I'm going to start taking it personally that you are just lingering around for these Live Note Alls, but just avoiding the things that I'm at.
No, I had to go to Boston that evening. So I was on a train to Boston while you were Live Note Alling.
Okay.
Knowing it all. I don't know how you. Knowing it all.
Yes.
Anyway.
All right. Quickly, put the players into Hogwarts houses.
Okay. So we've got seven people left. I wish I had a list of the people. Wait, can I make a list real quick so I can rattle them off?
I mean, I could give you the people that are on Survivor. That's the easy part.
That's what I'm doing, though, isn't it?
Jason, Julia, Michelle, and then the other alliance is Ty, Aubrey, Sydney, and Joe.
Aubrey.
That's the easy
Sydney,
part.
Joe. Okay. All right. Jason, you know, I think everyone's going to say Slytherin for him. Fine. I'll go along with it.
Okay.
Julia, we're talking either, I think we're talking Ravenclaw for her.
Sounds good.
Michelle, we're going to go with, you know, I think people might lean Hufflepuff, but I'm going to go Gryffindor for her. I think she's brave and I think she doesn't put up with shit.
Okay. Makes sense.
Okay, Ty. Oh my gosh. I'm going to go Slytherin.
Okay.
Aubrey, I am going to go... I mean, she's like really in between Gryffindor and Ravenclaw.
Mm-hmm.
I think she's like, you know, like the Hermione who still gets sorted into Gryffindor. I'm going to go Gryffindor.
Okay. Putting so much thought into this.
It's really important, Rob. Yeah. I mean, like, you want to, we could also, like, we're not going to do this, but like, we could also do Game of Thrones families, well, like the Lannisters.
Yeah. All right. Well, yeah. I have one last question, a Game of Thrones question for you. Michael Clark wants to know, who from this season's cast would you try to teach the game to? Who would be your Davos, Shireen?
From this cast.
Yeah. I'm surprised that that didn't catch on more, the Shireen and Shireen a year ago around this time.
Yeah. You know, she was...
I know.
It didn't happen in the books.
Okay. Don't spoil anything.
It didn't happen in the books.
Yes. Who would be your Sir Davos that you're teaching how to read?
Joe.
Are you pumped up for Game of Thrones this Sunday?
Joe, by the way, who is a Hufflepuff.
Yes.
Am I pumped for Game of Thrones this Sunday? Yes, because this is the first time, really, the show is far past the books now. Like, everything that we're going to see is probably, like, way past what the books have shown, which actually makes me sad.
Yes.
Because I wanted to read the books first and then just enjoy the show as a show. Can't do that anymore.
Can't do it.
But I'm still so thrilled that we're moving forward, finally. Oh, my God. And whatever, like, Daenerys Targaryen... And her, you know, the last that we saw of her, she flew on the dragon and she's out in the field.
Yes.
Oh my God, I'm dying.
Okay. All right. Well, that's going to be Sunday night. Josh Wiggler and I, plus show recaps. It's going to be exciting. All right. Shireen, thank you so much for coming in. This was wonderful.
Thank you for inviting me. I really enjoyed it.
So much fun. Time flew by like that.
Mm.
Do you have a hashtag?
Oh my God.
Yeah. The only thing I wrote down was traitor ass. I don't know if you want to use
that. We could
do
we talked about bootios. We talked about wicked.
I feel like traitor ass and bootios are different branches of the same tree.
Traitor booty?
Traitor booty? That sounds like, that's like some, I feel like, Trader Joe's knockoff of pirate booty.
It does sound like that.
and not Joe the Hufflepuff.
I don't want it to be Joe the Hufflepuff, because I've always been like a Snape fan, Slytherin, like, okay. You know.
All right, it's your podcast. You tell me what the hashtag is.
I want it to be something to do with New Day and Bootios and maybe Hamilton.
Yeah, I had a Hamilton question for you also, which was from Jonathan Amores, who says, you recently saw the Broadway musical Hamilton. Mm. Who are survivors Alexander Hamilton and Aaron Burr? And who are the Schuyler sisters?
Oh, that's like, that's way too intense. I don't know. I mean, the Alexander Hamilton is, I'm going to say Sydney. And then, well, I don't know. And then Aaron Burr is also Sydney.
Yes. Yes. Okay.
She's both.
Well, it makes sense to me that she would be the Aaron Burr, because she herself even said.
And I'm like, Burr.
Yeah.
We called it. We nailed it.
Nailed it.
All right. You got to give me a bootios hashtag. Maybe.
Well, I think that
Burr is booty.
Don't check me bootios.
Don't check me boo.
Yes. Yeah. Love it. Okay. Right, don't good. Check me bootios.
How do you spell that?
Okay. It's hashtag DONT.
Hey, that part's easy.
CHECK.
Got it.
ME.
With you.
BOOTYOS.
Okay. Don't check me bootios. All right. You're going to make some people very happy with that, and other people are very confused. All right. Shireen, what else is going on? What do you want to tell people to check out? Follow @TheShireen on Twitter.
Please do.
Are you live tweeting a lot this season?
No, I don't really live tweet. I maybe tweet like one or two comments throughout the episode or about the episode. Yeah, most of the stuff that I post is very like what they call SJW, social justice warrior.
Oh, about Survivor or just in general?
No, just
in,
like human rights stuff. Like, yes. like I don't know if you saw Neil actually just, you know, North Carolina just passed a law.
I've heard about this.
Basically that doesn't protect, they don't protect gay rights and trans rights. And so Neil made an outhouse and painted it rainbow colors and then hiked it up to the top of the highest
mountain. Yeah, how did he do that? I didn't understand how he got the outhouse to the top of a mountain.
He and his friend, I think, carried it up most of the way. Or like, I think they had it on a trailer. Well,
yeah, what are those going to have, like an arrow cart by Works?
I think it was just like a normal, just whatever, like a, you know, wheeled trailer thing and just rolled it all the way up there. And the two of them went up there and then they set up this outhouse. And I think they built most of it up there. I'm not sure, though. And then, you know, took a video of himself in this outhouse, essentially with the illusion of taking a dump on North Carolina's laws.
Okay.
Bigoted laws. That's the kind of stuff that I like to tweet about.
You tweet about.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not for everybody.
It's not for everybody. It's not for everybody. But I'm so glad. Hopefully this was for everybody that you were here.
I hope so. I hope that the people who loved it.
Yeah.
And I hope that the people who hate it just go away.
Are you enough of a lightning rod that the people that despise you listen to a 2-hour podcast? Are you that much of a lightning rod?
You know, like you'd think no, but like
you would think no.
But shockingly, like, you know, you can't, like the haters gonna hate.
I think that you're such a lightning rod that people that really don't like you, I think probably listen all the way through to make sure that you don't say anything that they really didn't like.
Yeah, Dan Foley made it this far. Yeah. I promise you.
You have a shout out to Dan Foley.
Hashtag Dan Foley is booty.
He came up surprisingly very little in this podcast.
It's true.
Yes.
That's good.
Okay, so
we're better off for it.
Close your mouth, open your ears, and just watch what happens.
Yes,
I really need to do more of that. I really need to just shut my mouth. Noted.
Okay, all right, Shireen. Anyway, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
This is so much fun.
The next podcast you guys are going to hear is going to be my voicemail podcast with Scott Green, who happened to appear on The Price Is Right today. Do you happen to catch that? I know you normally DVR it. Yeah. Most days, right?
I missed it.
We will talk with him about his adventures and a lot about Survivor and take all your voicemail questions and all of this. So check in with the Survivors on social media, one of Shireen's hobbies also.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love Scott Green. He's a good guy.
Yes. And so then that's going to be coming up in our voicemail podcast. Also, you know, I mentioned the Game of Thrones is right around the corner on Sunday night on post-show recaps. Well, you know, Shireen, a year ago around this time that Rob as a Podcast was winning the podcast award for best podcast of the year and also best entertainment podcast of the year. But now the white collar people are they think that they shut us out. Rob as a Podcast is not eligible for podcast awards anymore.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
We won too much.
Is that like they thought that you were gaming the system or something?
No. The people that won too many awards over a certain amount of year period are ineligible. Don't. We've been retired.
Jeff Probst ineligible for another Emmy?
Yeah, I guess not. Is the Amazing Race ineligible to win more Emmys for Best Outstanding Reality Show? Obviously not. But yeah, Podcast Awards RHAP is not eligible. That is why, for your consideration, we are asking post-show recaps for podcast awards at podcastawards.com in the TV and film category for your humble consideration.
Done.
Okay.
Is there a link out there?
Yeah, but go to podcastawards.com.
Okay.
And you can nominate post-show recaps and then really stick it to the man.
Yeah, I'm all for sticking it to the man.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. Shireen, thank you so much. Looking forward to your comments, hopefully, on robhasawebsite.com. And great getting to see you. And we'll be back with more RHAP. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast. Go to robhasawebsite.com/iTunes or search for RHAP in your favorite podcatcher. Have a good one. Take care, everybody. Bye.